Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway around Washington, D.C.
And this is Tex in Houston. So what's going on, man?
Well, apparently Goldman Sachs sponsored a debate tonight, and they had their candidates up there talking. I don't know, did you get a chance to watch it, Tex?
Yes, I was waterboarded and tortured with this evening. So I caught large portions of it when I was kind of in and out of consciousness there. But yeah, I saw these guys drone on about God only knows what.
I think they were droning on about allegedly foreign policy, but I think that both of them were trying to avoid that particular subject.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, seeing as how, let's be honest, there's vast agreement within D.C. as to what the foreign policy is, and they both are signed on to the exact same foreign policy, so now they're just nitpicking over the details and, well, this happened, and I would have done this. Well, you weren't freaking there, dude. Well, no, but I would have done it this way. Well, yeah, but you should have done that. And then, just mind-numbingly horrible. I mean, this is the illusion of choice. But anyway, we did note some interesting areas of disagreement, which is, were I to ask you, who do you think, if you had to pick a winner, now granted, nobody wins in this idiotic thing, but if you had to pick a quote winner, who would you say the winner was?
Well, Tex, it's interesting you should ask, because I pride myself on being a conservative, which would indicate that I should probably agree with the Republican. But the interesting thing is, if I was going to rate this thing not on substance or honesty or anything real, but just merely on rhetoric and prescripted lines well delivered, I would have to give a slight nod to Barack Obama. And add that to the fact that he's the incumbent, poses a tough battle for Mitt Romney, unless the narrative tomorrow morning is that the media is going to tell us that Romney won.
Well, I'll take a different approach, the opposing view. Of course, the whole thing was
like
wretched and horrible. Yeah, the whole thing was wretched and horrible in every way imaginable, and I would never, ever, wish on my worst enemy that they would have to watch this crap. But I felt that Romney did better-ish in the sense that Obama, he looked like the substitute teacher or something. Like, was the president not available tonight? Or, they just got this guy. Like, hey, my name's also happens to be Barack, and I'm here, and I got some note cards here that say stuff, and I'm going to read them, and hopefully you'll agree. But, yeah, I just thought it was wretchedly horrible. And what was that look on Barack Obama's face that he kept giving? Like, he would give this look over to, like, Romney, where he was, like, mildly bemused and or stoned. But it was distracting. You would see it's like, what is going on over there? So you have to hold your hand up so you couldn't actually see him while he was doing that, because it was really... terribly distracting. I would rather have someone huffing and puffing, Al Gore, Joe Biden style, or even you know, Mitt Romney trying to go to fisticuffs on the floor of that, you know, town hall debate or whatever. Has the town seen this? You seen a good old fashioned fist fight? Yay! You know, I don't know what that thing was about.
Yeah, I think we should have pugilistic contests for a president from now on. They're far more entertaining.
Look, I got a tooth over here. I won this debate. I got a molar. Anyway, but you know, as I did watch this thing, I kind of thought Romney did a good job of, you know.
You can't go wrong.
That's right. You can't go wrong. It's just whatever. Which I don't know. One of these idiots is saying something, you know, stupid. And anyway, but I kind of felt that Romney was, you know, sort of doing a good job on some of the foreign policy stuff. Not in the sense that he was advancing his own agenda, because he has the same agenda, but at least in the sense that he was advancing a narrative where Barack Obama is a, you know, poopy pants duty head who shouldn't be the president or whatever. But as I was watching this, I thought, you know, God, Gingrich would just, I mean, if Gingrich was here, you know, it's just like a man who wasn't there, you know. His presence hung over the room. You're like, God, it would just destroy this guy, you know. It would be, why? You know,
I mean, you have to ask yourself, Tex, if 70 million people heard Gingrich tonight for 40 minutes, it'd be over. It'd be over.
Of course. After the first debate, you know, they would have had to, like, find an Obama lookalike to send into the debate. It's like, dude, you're not cutting the mustard.
Stunt man.
You can't.
Obama's stunt double has to step into debate 2 and 3 against Gingrich.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, you know, I'll be honest, you know, I live in the United States, I guess, you know, by the grace of God, I guess. But, you know, one of these idiots is going to end up president. And so, you know, God help us all. Why are you doing this to us, man? Why has it got to be this way? You know, but I guess we're stuck with one of these two idiots. Anyway, I hope Romney's involved in a midair collision. And I hope Obama's in the other plane, you know, and the flaming wreckage lands on Joe Biden, because that would be awesome. And then it's like, hey, we're saved, you know. And maybe we could pick somebody who's actually qualified for this job.
Doesn't that make Paul Ryan the president?
Two shitheads. I don't know.
Or John Boehner. That would make John Boehner the president.
Oh, God.
We can't have that. He
well,
might
maybe
cry.
Maybe it continues to tumble in it. It's John
he
Boehner.
Might cry. Actually, anyway. Now you say midair collision, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I saw earlier today that a Romney balloon actually crashed.
Oh, God, yeah, I heard there. Oh, look, I was thinking about not voting for Romney, but now I've seen he's got a Goodyear blimp, so now I'm voting Romney. I mean, where did they come up with this shit? What is that? Is that like an industry that needs help or something? It's like, hey, we'll rent a blimp. And then we'll get the blimp industry vote. I mean,
it's brand awareness, because this is a marketing campaign, not a political campaign. And the interesting thing to me is obviously
because since there's no ideas, there's only logos.
Right. Exactly, it's all about the logo, and the logos are disgustingly similar. So who knows? But here's the interesting thing. You know how these things are basically pre-scripted, and the alleged, you know, debate prep they're doing is they're basically learning their lines. And, you know, it's designed to manage our minds, which is a relatively advanced science in advertising / propaganda now. However, what you always do when you put an advertising or a logo or a marketing theme out there is you focus test it in advance, you launch it, and then you tweak it. And so when they tweak these things after the first show where they were at podiums, and the second show where they were in the town meeting type style, and then this show where they're sitting down, it seemed that they sent each of them in there with a particular mission in order to keep managing our perception. And it seemed to me that Romney's mission
was
that narrative
to make the American people miserable.
Yeah,
because
well, they're to get
fucking successful at that. It's fucking amazing how on target that was. Anyway,
actually, I just saw the ticker. It just said that suicides have just increased 22% in the last 2 hours. I don't know why. I don't know if that's related, but apparently that's what's happened. But I think that they sent Romney in there because the narrative has been that the gap is closing, that Romney's ahead, that Romney kicked Obama's ass, that Romney was supposed to go in there and run the clock. You know, don't fuck this up, Mitt, because if you just go in there and, you know, stay steady, you're already ahead, and you continue to win. And Obama, you know, the left has basically been saying, hey, you haven't gone after him hard. You haven't fought. You've let him beat you up, so you got to go in there hard. And I think that might explain that look on his face that drove you nuts, is to make him look a little aggressive. And he did pivot in each question towards attacking Romney, and Romney, of course, took the higher road where he just says, Mr. President, attacking me is not answering the question. Only problem with that is that Obama actually kind of did answer the question. Now, I don't believe a flippant thing coming out of his mouth, but he did, in fact, answer the questions with some specifics. But what I found really interesting, Tex, I don't know if you picked up on this, you know, every one of us has a different perception, or maybe you were eating a different meal than I was or had different distractions, so we all have a different way of looking at it. But I noticed that since this was a foreign policy discussion, which we know foreign policy is dictated by the transnational bankers, not the president. He's just the guy that implements it. And, of course, Congress has completely abdicated any authority over foreign policy, so it's pretty much all the wonkish think tanks in Washington that work for the bankers that come up with these ideas. But these two guys are both weak on foreign policy, and so they wanted to stay away from it. So I noticed that they both kept on pivoting to other topics every time the moderator would try to bring it to foreign policy. And Romney would always pivot back to the economy because, obviously, as the, quote, CEO businessman, he's got the lead on the economy. And Obama would keep turning it back to stupid crap like teachers or education or some crap
We got to fund education.
How's that? What? You know, the world is on friggin' fire, and we're worried about teachers' pensions and whether kids can get the newest version of the textbook that explains.
How much are they fucking making? They got fucking job security. They only work 3 months out of the year. Teachers' life's so hard. Oh, these kids, you know, they're out of control. Come on. Kids are out of control.
But apparently.
Talking back to me. You know what? You're the teacher. Just tell them to shut the hell up or write them, you know, a pass to go to the principal. Here's a pass to go to the principal. Fuck off, you know? Oh, that was real hard. Like, you got a moral quest here going on. I don't know what to do with this troublesome kid.
Yeah.
Send him to the fucking office. You
but
know?
What I got...
Get him fucked out. It's hard, yeah, right? And you got a pension, so fuck off.
As if the kid really doesn't, you know, doesn't want to go to the office. Go to the office. Oh, you mean so I get to leave class? That sucks.
You're
going to be suspended. That's 3 days you need to stay home and not come to school. Oh, really? Well, that sounds like an awful punishment.
When you were going to school, you know, I don't know what's going on in your school, but, you know, part of
I don't know what's going on in my school.
Nobody knew. The principal didn't know, right? But, I mean, if you acted up where I was going to school, man, you got licks. We call them licks, which licks, by the way, that's code for the spanking of a lifetime with a wooden fucking paddle is what it is. And ouch, you know. But, you know, if you acted up, you know, you were sort of given, you know, two choices. Get on that waterboard or you take the licks, right, you know. And, I mean, you could take, like, you could puss out and you could take, like, Saturday D-Hall or something like that. But, man, every time someone got called to the office, no matter what it was for, like, even if their parents were there to pick them up or something, we're like, take the licks. but everybody, you take the licks, you know, you'll do fucking Saturday D-Hall, you just get spanked, you're like, shit, that hurt, and then, you know, you go away. I don't have kids these days, you know. Now teachers, they can't control anything. Yeah, because the kids got no fucking discipline. Wonder who did that,
yep.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Didn't the teachers' union come up with all this shit? That's why, you know, schools can't spank kids, parents can't spank kids, you know, no one can tell a kid what to do, and now they're running around fucking setting people on fire and Long Beach, California. Did you see that, by the way?
Yeah. But you have to talk nicely to them so they won't do that again.
Yeah,
well, Tex, when we were growing
self-esteem, though, so good for them. He felt great that he set that dude on fire in front of that store. He's like, hey, this is awesome.
He did it well, and he felt
good
about it. And that's what's really important.
I'm brave enough to do this. I've really accomplished something here. I set a man on fire. Anyway, okay.
The fact that it's a crime is irrelevant.
For this, right? Yeah. There's no penalties for this, right? Okay, yeah. I feel bad. Anyway, fuck off. I'm awesome because I have, you know, tremendous amounts of self-esteem. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, Tex, when we were growing up, you were actually in the South, and even though the Commonwealth of Virginia is considered the South, we're in close proximity to the Ninth Circle of Hell around Washington, D.C., and it's got Northeast infection here to a high degree. So there were no
we're
licks.
We're part of the West. We're sort of part of the Southwest. No?
Well, whatever. It's slightly different, but the fact is that corporal punishment was only recently removed down there, whereby here it had been gone for a long time, and hence, you know, the kids have been a little bit more distracted for considerably longer. But what I found interesting is that, you know, Obama pivoting to that and saying that, you know, class size is important. Teachers will tell you that. Oh, that's fantastic. If teachers have less students per class, then the terrorists will stop trying to kill us. It's just a great solution. That's fantastic. Thank you, Mr. President. That's a wonderful solution to the problem of global terrorism, is to talk about teacher class size. I mean, they're both pivoting away to issues that, you know, are for their base, and both shying away from the foreign policy, because the fact is, I think that what they said on multiple occasions was, I agree with the governor, I agree with the president. They're in agreement on the fact that we need to have unending, undeclared wars. The question on drones was particularly interesting, because they basically both came out, I like drones. That's fantastic. I'm glad that we have killer drones that you're flying. And, of course, they're talking about Pakistan.
They apparently never saw that one scene in RoboCop 2, right, where they were, like, testing out the new drone. You know, hey, this new drone, little couple glitches there. It's sort of, next thing you know, you piss it off, it'll pump like 100 clips in you, right, in front of like the whole board meeting. No. Anyway, but I'm pro-drone. I just hope they get that bug worked out of the thing.
Wait till Skynet takes over those drones. That didn't work out too well for us last time. So, you know, I just thought it was amazing that on all the key points of tools and infrastructure for a police state, a global police state, they're both 100% in favor, according to what their banker buddies told them. But I thought it was interesting. At the beginning, Obama called Romney a flip-flopper and said, you're all over the map. And then, you know Romney...
I wrote that one down, too. Anyway.
Yeah, and Romney's response was, that's not accurate. Dude, I mean, it's kind of a given that neither one of you is going to be accurate. You got to hit him with something a little bit better. And,
because Romney's like, shit, he nailed me on this flip-flopping thing. I mean, that's my MO, man. That's my calling card, you know? I mean, so I think that, you know, Obama kind of missed the bigger picture there, where he is right that, you know, Romney's been all over the map on Afghanistan and Iraq, and most of all foreign policy, also all domestic policy. Also, any position politically ever that any politician would ever have to, like, take a stand on, Mitt Romney's totally been all over the place on. But what Obama is missing the point on is that Romney has been steadfast in his flip-flopping. He has never veered from his flip-flop stance on anything. And so I thought that was a cheap shot by Obama, I forget who these guys are, by Obama to try to paint Romney as some kind of political flip-flopper, when really he is steadfast in only saying exactly what is always best for Mitt Romney at any given moment. And so I think he missed the bigger picture there.
So what you're saying is, because Romney's consistently inconsistent, that's actually a plus for him.
Well, you know, in this topsy-turvy world, what am I as a voter to do? You know, I gotta find some handholds to grasp onto, something I like about Romney. So I found something he's steadfast about. He is consistently full of shit about everything that he says. I'm like, well, I could count on that, you know. So here's something, you know, I could stake a claim with Romney and just say, this guy is going to be full of shit all the time and just say whatever will make him look good. So I can count on that, you know. And so it's like, all right, I'm going to hang my hat on that. And then maybe there's somewhere else I could get. So that's like a handhold. That kept me from falling off the Romney train. So I'm like, yeah, okay, full of shit all the time. And then, you know, now I got to have like a foothold or something so I can start climbing up the Romney train and getting on it, you know. But I don't know. Are there other footholds? Why else would I support this guy?
Yeah, you got me there. That's a really tough question, and I'm not sure I can answer it. But I did notice that the fact is that I didn't believe a blasted thing that came out of Obama's mouth. But he was actually a far more proficient liar in tonight's debate than Romney was. He was far more consistent and on point, obviously, because Romney's consistently inconsistent, which I thought was interesting, because it goes back to, I think, what you were talking about with the whole self-esteem thing. You know, Obama came in tonight with a good amount of self-esteem, and he was able to lie consistently. But I found it interesting. At one point, Romney was talking about the Middle East, and he talked about you know, 12 different things in 6 different ways on each one, and took every possible conceivable position imaginable so that he can, you know, have everybody agree with him on something at some point. But then he said, you know, they should have elections, because when there are elections, people tend to vote for peace, not war. And my response is, hey, Mr. Dipshit Governor, yes, when we have elections, people vote for peace, not war. Hence why you didn't get the nomination of the Republican Party. Hence why over 90% of veterans support Ron Paul and not you. Hence why if you actually didn't have this faux election between a illegal pretender president and a usurper pretender conservative nominee, and it was a real election, we'd be probably looking at a Gingrich-Paul victory, hands down, because people don't want war. And what you would have is the strength and projection of power of Gingrich with the temperance and constitutionalism of Ron Paul, which I think would be fantastic.
Well, you know, I mean, I was watching the thing, and I already mentioned that I thought, you know, I was wondering, where's the president? Why do they get the substitute teacher to come in and, you know, just kind of, you know, field some questions for the class or whatever? But, you know, then you'd look over at Romney and you're like, man, where's the Republican nominee? Why is this guy still around? You know, where's our nominee? You know, why are we still tolerating this guy and pretending he's legitimate? He's not the fucking nominee. Nobody wants this guy. Go the fuck away. Look, I'll tell you, Rex, like sometimes during the day you listen to the radio and, you know, you turn it on because you're stuck in traffic, you know, and so you turn this thing on, you're like, yeah, you know, maybe I'll listen a little to the jabber there, see what the jabberers are talking about. And then there'll be like a clip of Barack Obama, and he's like saying something, and like your blood pressure starts to boil. He's like, God, I just hate this guy. I mean, he's like an idiot. It's like, how could you? Everything he says is just so full of shit, you know? I mean, he's lost touch with reality. Well, he hasn't lost touch with reality. He's just like, holy shit, you know, my goose is freaking cooked here. I better come up with some real super happy horse shit that people will buy. You're like, I cannot believe this guy is going to be the president. Can we not find someone to defeat him? You know, it's like Mitt Romney's ahead and whatever. Oh, it's okay, Mitt Romney's ahead. And then they like show a clip you listen to a clip on the radio. They play a clip of Romney and he starts talking. And then you're like, oh, God, I hate this guy. Like, I wish he would just lose. I can't believe this guy. Why is he talking? Why didn't he shut up? Why don't they stop this clip now? Because it's just making the audience angry. This is not getting Mitt Romney any extra votes. This is turning people off, you know? And then they cut back to Obama. So I just go from this depression that Obama's going to be the next president to this depression that, oh, God, it's going to be Romney. And I just don't know, you know? And then I, like, drive my car off a bridge. That's what I do.
That's your best
solution. And then I'm like, I'm happy, you know? And then, you know, I'm in heaven and everything's good. And I'm like, what's going on? Why do we got to do that down there? Anyway.
Well, I think that the fact that we, quote, don't know is designed to give us this impression that there is a contest going on. The fact is they've already decided who the winner is, and they're going to let us know through the narrative. Because, you know, if put it this way, if the election were to be decided only on tonight's debate, okay, between these two morons, I suspect it would handily go to Obama for the simple fact that they were so much in agreement on most everything that people would just say, okay, both of these guys are more or less the same. We'll just stick with the devil that we know, which is usually what happens. This is the exact same thing that happened in 1924 when we had the kind of the flip side of the situation. Instead of a horrible and terrible economy and war, we had peace and a great economy, and Silent Cal Coolidge was the president, and the Democrats ran their last truly conservative candidate ever, and that was Davis. And Davis and Coolidge agreed on just about everything, and they were all both, you know, conservatives. And so people were like, well, you know, we'll just stick with Silent Cal. And so Calvin Coolidge won handily. Now we have a horrible economy, unending global wars, and we're running two guys that are both as corporatist and as Keynesian and as liberal as each other. So people are likely to just stick with the devil they know. But we'll find out when they give us the narrative. But what I thought was interesting was when Romney said something, I forget what it was. It was one of his other, you know, let me take 8 positions on one issue and see which one resonates with people. And Obama basically says, Governor, you basically say that you'll do the same things that I'll do, except that you say it louder.
Yeah, I so heard that.
That's how he's going to win. He's going to be louder.
Well, he says it's louder and he doesn't mean it. So that's the other thing.
Yeah.
But I have a couple Romney quotes here. You know, I didn't write down a lot of what Obama was saying because it's just like, oh, great, it's Obama talking. Let's drone on a monotone and say the same crap over and over again, tax for the wealthy, cutting our schools. Dude, the deficit is $1.4 trillion a year. Like, do you know how many billions of dollars that is a month, you jackass? You know, I mean, just we're spending that on school books? Is that what you're telling me? What is the Department of Education actually doing on a daily basis? Ever wonder that? Let me tell you something. The Department of Agriculture, which I used to work right next door to, takes up two full city blocks of the Department of Agriculture. You know what percentage of the population farms? Like less than 2%, right? Let me tell you something. It's an old joke. So this guy comes in, you know, he becomes president or whatever, and so he takes him in to show him the Department of Agriculture. There's all these people sitting at a desk. And the guy's like, oh, wow, so these are the people here. They, you know, work in the Department of Agriculture. They oversee the farms of America, you know, help make them run properly and everything. And then he sees one guy who's at his desk, and he starts crying. And the president's like, well, what's wrong with that guy? And he says, oh, his farmer just died. So anyway, so screw all this stuff.
Sad but true.
If you get rid of the Department of Education, that's not the end of education in the world. I mean, I'll just tell you that right now. It's not like, oh, all of a sudden everybody gets stupid. Let me tell you, since the Department of Education has taken over education, people getting smarter or dumber? Smarter or dumber? This is like a multiple choice, you know, true, false. People got smarter after the Department of Education took over, true or false? And if you put false, you need to put that comma, and then you need to write in a complete sentence why that's false, because it's total bullshit. Anyway, but here's something stupid that Romney said. Libya. This is just, I don't know if I want to start with that one because it's a phraseology thing, but I'll go here. He said that, you know, we got together a team of Islamic scholars and, you know, talked to them about how do we, you know, bring peace to the Middle East and start helping moderate voices have their opinions expressed. And you know what they said, Rex? Do you remember what the unanimous answer of the Islamic scholars was?
I must say that that one probably evaded my memory.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it was more economic development. If you gave more economic development. Yeah. So yeah. Build Egypt for us, and then we'll stop blowing you up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's great. So let's everybody go build Egypt. That'll go fucking moderate them. Hey, I got an idea. It's crazy. Why don't we leave them alone and tell them how you could create a successful economy by creating certain rules of the game that everybody abides by, mostly with a government, you know, mafioso, everyone on the take model going away, and let the private sector do its own thing and work out the best commercial contracts for itself, and then all of a sudden you would have a prosperous and vibrant middle class going on in the Middle East, and people who are, you know, seeing their standards of living increase over time and have hope for the future, all of a sudden they're less interested in strapping bombs to themselves and, you know, going into public squares or whatever the hell they're doing, or groping women over at Tahrir Square, you know, or whatever the hell, you know, is their current hobby. but no, they said, please write us a check. And that would stop all the murder if you wrote us the check. So, and Romney, he said this was a great idea, like this is some sort of revelation for him. Hey, why don't you impanel a blue ribbon commission to ask Tex and Rex what it would take for us to stop advocating for third parties against Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, against the two-party duopoly, you know?
And, yeah, why not? We'll take a check.
Yeah, maybe if there was economic development, we might stop that, right? I don't know. So it always comes down to that. Whatever your blue ribbon panel is talking about, they always want to check. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it sounds to me like writing checks to that part of the world is precisely why Thomas Jefferson sent the Marines for the first time overseas to the to Tripoli in Libya specifically, was to stop bribing them to return our stuff to us. But
Exactly.
It's interesting that the point that you made about, you know, showing them the way by leading by example of free markets and less government corruption. But I have to ask you a question. Given the current state of our country, the oligarchy, the corporatist Keynesian policies, the duopoly sham election, are we really the ones to show other people how to do it?
Oh, sure. Why not?
You know, I mean, we used to do it, but it apparently
great,
worked so well, we stopped it. You know, apparently it was working so well, we were like, oh, we can't have any more of this. People are, you know, middle class is rising and their tax revenues are higher because people are paying less as a tax of their income. And these free markets are working, but it's, you know, competitive and people are knocking each other out.
Well, Rex, for this system to work, it requires people to have a sort of a set of principles and a character, right? A moral character, a moral fiber, where they will, put in bad circumstances, continue to do the good thing, right? And this doesn't just go to our leadership, right? Because we don't have leadership. We are the leaders, all right?
Mm-hmm.
We empower these assholes, right? I didn't empower Mitt Romney. Nobody here empowered Mitt Romney, but he crowned himself, and now he claims to be the Republican nominee, right? And so this guy's run around claiming to act on your behalf, but it requires strong moral fiber on your behalf to stand up for your principles, because if you always go along to get along, then you got no character either, and you're part of the freaking problem. So you know, our system works here. It will work overseas. It will work in any number of places, but you have to have the right mix of people. And those types of people are the ones who will stand up against adversity and do the right thing.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Tex. The one thing that I will say, though, is getting the, quote, right mix of people is a difficult thing to do, because you have to ask yourself, who are the right mix of people here? Well, the right mix of people here, and I don't care if they came through the front door yesterday or they came through the front door in 1607, the right mix of people are people that got their asses up out of where they were, boarded a boat or a plane or whatever, and got themselves here to pull themselves up by their individual bootstraps. We're a nation of doers and rugged individualists, which I don't think the mix is anywhere else in the world, possibly the Canadians to some degree, and maybe in Australia. But then again, remember that most of those people didn't voluntarily go over there. They're descendants of a penal colony, so slightly different mix. But I think that really sets us apart, which is why we were able to do it following, you know, 800 years of British common law regarding property rights and such. And I'm not saying it can't be duplicated, but we've abdicated that you know, it worked so well, we decided to scrap it.
Yeah, and it's not that people need to agree with one another, but they need to be acting for what they perceive to be the greater good, but they can't just say, oh, whatever I think goes. They have to have an understanding of what the greater good is and how to work in its interest. But I want to go on with the little section I called Stupid Shit Romney Said. Okay, so they talked about Syria.
For those of you playing at home, we have prizes.
Yes, exactly. This is the
next on Stupid Shit That Romney Says. Tex, take it from here.
Stupid Shit Romney Said. You know, this guy may get to be president. This might be like a permanent feature. So Romney said that Syria is Iran's route to the sea. You know, this is like the whole geographical confusion thing before, where people were like,
yeah.
Did Biden say that Syria is five times the size of Libya? I went back,
yeah.
I deconstructed that, I reread, you know, took it back in context. No, he did not. He cleared that up in the middle of the sentence. He said, that is Libya, right? But Romney actually apparently doesn't know geography, because he thinks Syria is Iran's route to the sea. Hey, it's called the Persian Gulf, dumbass. The Persian Gulf. You know,
wait,
Persepolis,
are you saying?
Back in the ancient world, Persepolis was in Persia, which is now Iran. And, you know, Iranians who come here, they don't want to be associated with Iran, because, like, you know, I'm not one of those, you know, douchebags. Just, I am Persian, right? Yeah, I read the freaking Bible. I know where Persia is, all right? So, you know. Anyway, also, they have a vast coast along the Indian Ocean.
What?
So,
Iran does? That's crazy.
I don't know. They just, opened that thing up.
Apparently, is that compared to the vast coast that Syria has in that little sliver of land between Lebanon and Turkey?
Yes, actually, that little tiny piece. Iran is like, shit, we have this huge coast on the Persian Gulf. It's like the world's most important waterway in terms of oil and everything. And we got all this oceanfront property on the Indian Ocean. If we could just get this piece of shit in Syria, we would have it made. Let's go invade.
We would be able to cross thousands of miles of desert to get to 35 feet of Mediterranean Ocean.
We could open a Club Med. You know what kind of crazy dollars we could drag down a Club Med in that sliver of fucking Syria? Come on.
And it's especially
it's
important
like
because
money. It's like you're printing money.
We ship all our oil to China, so we need a Western passage.
Yeah, that's right. Meanwhile, seriously, guys, you know, everyone that's on the radio, do not tell Iran about the Suez Canal. They don't know about it. They never even heard of this shit. They don't know they can get to the Mediterranean with their vast coastline stretching larger than the coast of California along these oceans. They don't know that they could get to the Mediterranean through fucking Suez. They don't. So just don't tell them. They're going to keep fighting for that 500-foot long coast of Syria so they can get there and do something important. Anyway, so thank you, Romney, you know, for trying at geography. Anyway, you suck at Jeopardy. And then, he got back to this one. This is always my favorite one, which is where he says, we have a Navy that is, you know, smaller than it's been since 1917. Okay, firepower, a little bigger. Firepower, I've already talked about this one. About
yeah, and Obama caught him on that. Obama caught him on that pretty good.
He actually... he tagged him, and I was like, I think Obama's listening to the Tex and Rex show. But then, this time, Romney, he added in something new, right? So he's going to pepper something in. Maybe Romney's listening to Tex and Rex, too. You never know, right? So this time, he said that, and our Air Force, the fleet is older. Our Air Force is older than at any time since 1947, which is when the Air Force has broken away from the Army Air Corps, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the oldest. But it's never been since 1947. Oh, my God, we got this old creaky, you know, Air Force going on. I was just curious, what age are you counting a B-52 as? Are you counting those B-52s? Because they built those things at the end of World War II, right?
Right, yep.
So are you saying that's a 1947 plane or a 1950 plane? Or are you counting that as a... we totally upgraded the shit out of the avionics on this thing, like, back, you know, in 2001, and this thing is dropping bombs that don't freaking miss, you know. Also, it is flying above the level at which, you know, anti-aircraft can pick it up. I mean, most of the times what happens if you got a B-52 over you is you don't even pick the damn thing up on radar and bombs start going off. So, you know, maybe we invented that back in 1947, but, you know, I don't know. How do you improve on that? I mean, that's pretty – that's an awesome weapon, you know?
It's like a lethal weapon.
Yeah. You know, do you think that, like, you know, Henry V came together and he's like, you know, my ministers, my war ministers, I got to talk to you. We're still using swords, man. I mean, my God, swords. This technology is a
6,000-year-old weapon.
Yeah, this is a 6,000 – I mean, what are we doing here? Our army is equipped with the oldest material since it was created in, I mean, we got swords, and he just, like, throws one down and walks out of the room. It's a B-52, man. What do you want? You need some ship better than this? I don't know.
Well, I found it interesting, though, that neither one of them brought up the serious deficiency in quantity of bayonets in the military. I mean, you know, there's just not enough of those. And plus, you know, gunpowder, you know, to put in their little, you know, powder horns to for the rifles, you know, they don't have enough of that either. So it was such a ridiculous commentary. I mean, I don't know for a fact, but because I'm not a military historian, but I'm fairly confident that one aircraft carrier has more firepower than our entire Navy in 1907. I could be wrong, but I think it does.
But,
well, I have quite the feeling that if you were to bring the an aircraft carrier from today up against our fleet back then, you know, you know, even bring Big Mo and all that kind of stuff. I'm sorry, I just, you know, I think you would wipe that thing out.
It's like the Philadelphia experiment.
Yes. But apparently, for Romney, it's about the actual numbers, not the quality. It's quantity, not quality. So I don't know.
Now, you know what that tells you, though? That tells you that he's a bean counter. It tells you that he's not a businessman or entrepreneur, but a capitalist who looks at things in terms of units. And it's how much money can the corporations that manufacture these things make by cranking out more units, irrespective of needed or required firepower. See, because he's not a military man. Remember, this is a guy that will go into the field of battle, not with generals, but with lawyers. And clearly, instead of asking the military what their needs are in order to fight the new enemy that we're facing in the 21st century, he consults with accountants to determine how many ships will increase the bottom line. And if that's the kind of person we're going to have as a commander-in-chief, I don't know if that's much better than having the current moron who's in charge of our military in office.
Well, look, Barack Obama's an idiot, and he said, you know, when he was trying to, oh, I got to get shovel-ready jobs or whatever the hell he said. You know, he says that all the time, right? And so what, so we got to fix our infrastructure and build bridges and roads and fix our schools. Okay, yeah, so we're going to build all these thousands of dollars and, you know, billions of dollars of bridges and roads and spend all these billions of dollars on these broken schools and everything. Anyway, it's 4 years later, and nothing's better, and everything's worse. And so Romney's like, you know, hey, this investment totally sucked, right? Newt Gingrich said it best when he was talking about the corridor over there in South Carolina. It's like they haven't done anything for these people, right? Because they haven't. But Romney's like, hey, I got some shovel-ready jobs. Let's crank out more battleships. You know? I mean,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, look, people can be employed doing that. But, you know, is it necessary? Is it necessary to the extent that you want to go $1.4 trillion into debts every year to build these things? Do we really need them? What do you do with them after you've built them? Yes, someone makes money when it's being built, but once you've built it, guess what? It becomes a huge cost center because now it has to be maintained. You have to have a crew. It's got to have a place to go. It's got to have a mission, something to do during the day. You know, all these people are on it. I mean, this is true. You're cranking out another liability. You know, it's not an asset. You've just built another liability. Okay?
But it's only a liability to the people and to the country. It is an asset to the company that manufactured it and received the compensation for building it.
Exactly. And it's not like our Navy is not the number one Navy in the world. It's not like... It's kind of the number one Navy in the world. It's totally the number one Navy in the world. Like, if all the other navies got together, like, hey, let's sail over to America and, you know, just kick the shit out of them. What are you guys saying? It's like, yeah, let's do that because I'm tired of these guys. You know, they get about halfway and like, hey, where'd all those other ships go? Oh, crap, there's a fire on my deck. And then they're at the bottom of the ocean. What happened? I don't know. Fucking B-52. That's what that is. It's a B-52. You know, just you.
Davy Jones Locker.
That's right. You know, next thing you know, you're down there. It's like, I hope this thing's also part submarine. Did we build that? Oh, we didn't get the part submarine option. Okay, so we're all dead then. But anyway, then Romney was saying, talking about, this is sort of about the Arab Spring thing and what's going on over there. So he said...
Is that like Irish Spring?
Yes, it is. It'll get you clean as a whistle. Romney says, I would have recognized the desire for freedom in the Middle East, and I would work within the region, or we should have worked within the region, to bring about a transition to democracy and do it without violence.
Yes.
Okay. let me tell you something. They've been trying that. Okay, so it doesn't work that way in the Middle East because you got tyrants that they're not really interested in talking so much about democracy and stuff. Turns out that's like their least favorite topic of conversation. You could talk about anything. They don't want to talk about democracy. So when you have the thing going on in Tahrir Square and everything and the people standing up for democracy, let me tell you, spoiler alert, people, who's been working behind the scenes to help make sure that happened in that country for lo these many years? That'd be the United States. Yes, the prize, that's the United States. We were working on that. There's a George Bush foreign policy. Many of you Republicans may have supported it when he did it. Now you're opposed to it that Obama's doing it because you don't know what's going on and you're just voting for Pittsburgh Steelers versus Dallas Cowboys and you're completely lost in the world and everything that happens on planet Earth happens without rhyme or reason because you're unwilling to see what's actually going on. But so the United States has actually been, the United States has actually been working in the region for a very long time to try to bring these revolutions about. Under George Bush, we started this policy. That's why all these revolutions kind of came about the same time, because it takes a little while to get them set up. And then when you got them, you just get, kind of get them going a cropper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have worked with them to prevent the violence. Yeah, well, we did work with them, and we did the thing, and the Tahrir Square, and that was kind of the deal. And Mubarak wasn't. It's not like, oh, okay, well, it's Tahrir Square, so I guess I'm done. I guess I'm not in power anymore. I mean, right now I could do whatever I want. I could have people killed just by looking at me wrong, and I can have all the women that I want, and the United States, and I go to all the sexy parties and everything. But now there's a bunch of people standing in public square, so I guess I'm gone. I'm going to go back to my apartment. I hope it's a nice apartment, not one of those crappy ones like most of you live in, but I hope I get a good one, That doesn't happen. He's like, no, kill these guys. Get rid of them. No, I don't want to. And so then we had to say, well, Mubarak, you got to go.
Yep.
That's what happened. So Romney's saying I would have done that different. No, you wouldn't have.
Of course not.
Because this was the plan that was come up with by the, national security community under Bush. And it's still going on. And so for the people in the Democrat Party who are furious with Obama, why don't you change it? Well, because it's kind of plugged in. And he got there. He's like, hey, I want to change that. Like, yeah, well, no, you don't.
Well, Tex, didn't essentially this neocon agenda kind of come about under Clinton? I mean, wasn't he the first one to basically sign off on a regime change in Iraq but never actually followed through on it? I mean, these things they transcend administrations. It's established.
Exactly. Well, it was dual containment back then, dual containment of Iraq and Iran, right? And then we started talking about regime change under Clinton.
Regime change
and rollback, right? They were borrowing... Mm-hmm. Because, they're Democrats, right? They're trying to do something in foreign policy, so they got to go grab at a bunch of Republican wars. So they grabbed Reagan's rollback of communism, like, hey, we got to do rollback of Saddam Hussein. But there was no support for it, and he was fighting for his life over the Monica Lewinsky thing, and so it didn't go anywhere. But look, I mean, when Bush came into power, when he became president, right? So when Bush became president, I was there and in D.C., and I was like, look, Saddam Hussein, I was fresh out of school, with my degree in international relations, all right? So I studied a lot about Iran. That was kind of my focus area there. And so when I was looking at what was going on in Iraq with all the weapons of mass destruction, the big deal with Iran is that they're building nuclear weapons, right? And so, one of my concerns was, if Iraq has all these weapons of mass destruction, it only encourages Iran, which now has Pakistan on one border with nukes, and Iraq that has weapons of mass destruction and is pursuing nukes on its other border, it only increases its desire to have these things.
That's right.
So I said, look, at some point, someone's got to go in and stop this, right? And so I figured at the beginning of the administration, Clinton couldn't do it because he had too many scandals going on, right? So I already knew when Bush came in that was going to be one of the number one things on the agenda, at least in foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
And, it took 9/11 to make it happen, but I was not, felt like I was shocked when that happened.
Yeah, well, that was the plan all along. It was pretty easy to see. If you read it, they published this stuff for you to read. Just go pick up a couple of CFR published documents about, op-eds about foreign policy, and they're pretty much telegraphing exactly what they intend to do. And here's the crazy thing. I heard both of these guys tonight basically encourage Iran to a nuclear weapon. Oh, Rex, you're crazy. They didn't say that. Sure they did. Because let's just switch perspective for a minute. Stop looking at this as a Democrat or a Republican or a pissed off Republican or whatever you might be, and just look at it objectively. Here you are, a nation that is essentially a minority because Iran may be ostensibly in the Middle East, and they are Muslim, but they are not Arabs. They are Persians predominantly. And so here you are, it's a minority nation, and like Tex just pointed out, surrounded by a nuclear power and a power with weapons of mass destruction, which were used against your country in an eight-year war with Saddam Hussein. And where did he get those weapons of mass destruction? Oh, that's right. They were sold to him by Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld in the 80s when they were at war with Iran. So here you are listening to these guys who are all of a sudden telling you, we're going to keep giving aid to Pakistan. I'm sorry, Pakistan. We're going to keep helping them because, maybe they're not totally friendly to us, but there are some friendly elements. But the fact is that they have 100 nuclear warheads, so we have to be nice to them. And then let's rattle the sabers and talk about invading the crap out of Iran and bombing the shit out of them. So you're sitting there going, okay, it looks like the Americans play nice with the countries that have nuclear bombs and they treat the ones without nuclear weapons like crap. So maybe if we get some nuclear weapons, then the United States will give us money and treat us nicely. Wouldn't you be thinking in those terms if you were them?
Well, exactly, Rex. And look, Iran, they have said repeatedly, and this is before 2000, I mean, this is, goes back to 1998, 1999, they looked at what happened with North Korea. North Korea started getting nuclear weapons, and what did we do? We gave them aid, we sent them food, we did all this kind of stuff. We propped up the regime.
Yep.
That's what we did. Us and China, yep. The only reason that North Korea is still around is because of the United States and China keep it around.
Correct.
And the reason China keeps it around is they don't want South Korea on their border because it's a U.S. client, and also, you know, it's a powerful, you know, state, right? So it's got a vibrant economy and a good military. Mm-hmm. They don't want that on their doorstep. They'd rather have a buffer zone. And the United States props up North Korea because they don't want to duke it out with China because, you know, hey, China's buying our bonds. So let's not, you know, let's just agree that it's okay if North Korea continues to exist. And literally, my friends, it's not much more complicated than that. But North Korea, they can ship all these nuclear weapons technology and stuff all over the world, except that, you know, they're sort of infiltrated and that kind of, they always seem to have difficulties with that for some reason. That's all I'm saying. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not sure why either, but I don't think that we have anything to do with it, possibly. Tex, we're within 8 minutes of the top of the hour. I'm going to open up the phones at the top of the hour. We've already got a couple of callers on hold. But for the rest of you, the call-in number is 646-649-1013, 646-649-1013. We're going to bring you in one at a time to comment on tonight's debate. If you just want to listen, let me know that you want to listen, and I'll put you on mute again. And if you want to chime in, then comment on the debate, and we'll have a good conversation about it. But the next 8 minutes, Tex, you want to wrap up any other observations that you have on tonight's show?
Well, you know, not really. I'd rather, you know, at this point I'd like to turn it over to the callers, but I would just say that, you know, once again, you know, we're just being bored to tears. Actually, Obama looked bored to tears. I think Romney did a better job than him, but Romney sucked. And I wish we actually had real candidates and or a real nominee so that we could actually vote for somebody who's qualified to be president rather than these pretenders to the throne.
Well, that would be unfortunate because then Goldman Sachs might not be tonight's winner. And folks, keep in mind that tonight's debate was brought to you by Goldman Sachs. But tomorrow night's debate, even though they tried to bill tonight's as the last presidential debate, actually the first presidential debate will be tomorrow night, and that one is brought to you by the Free and Equal Foundation, I believe. And that will be at 8 p.m. Central in Chicago, 9 p.m. Eastern. You can see it on a few outlets like Russian television. You can link to it, I think, from Free and Equal. I believe it will be broadcasting on C-SPAN, so you have no excuse for not being able to see it. And that debate will be between four candidates. That's Governor Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party, Congressman Virgil Goode of the Constitution Party, Dr. Jill Stein of the Green/Socialist Party, and Mayor Rocky Anderson of the Justice Party, which is another left-leaning whatever. Anyway, it should be an interesting debate because I believe that even though the two left candidates are going to be completely wrong on everything, it'll be interesting to actually see some real questions with some real answers as opposed to this stage bullshit that they keep feeding us and this narrative. And then I suspect that whoever they tell us won the debate tomorrow morning is likely to be the winner on November 6th. And interestingly enough, this past Friday, Tex, I don't know if you saw this, but this past Friday, and I forget where it was, I think it might have been in Arizona or New Mexico, a local CBS affiliate during the People's Court accidentally leaked a program that puts the ticker at the bottom of the show, and it showed the 2012 presidential election results with 99.5% of precincts reporting. And
did Big Bird win?
What's that?
Did Big Bird win?
It was not Big Bird, actually. It was 43% Obama, 40% Romney. which is interesting because obviously those won't be the final numbers now that this quote accident happened. So
shit,
whatever they're gonna, yeah, whatever
Boston
whatever they
grouch,
come up with, we'll see. But what I found interesting about it, Tex, is that 17% of the vote obviously did not go to Obama or Romney, which means that they are going to allow us third-party psychos who want to spoil the race for everybody to garner about 17% of the vote, which is supposedly significant enough to make us quiet, but not so significant as to outdo Ross Perot's 19% back in the 90s. So I thought that was interesting, but you know, obviously they wrote it off as a mistake. Someone was running a test program, but I mean, look, the fact is that the media's owned, 95% of the media in this country is owned by about five corporations, and those five corporations are pretty much owned by one bank, and it is whoever owns the Federal Reserve Bank, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, Wells, and Chase. And so, you know, the narrative is always controlled.
You're being played, you know.
Exactly.
They've
already decided.
The thing is, what are you going to do about it? You know, I mean, now this is creeping death. You're heading off the cliff. It's called November 7th. Or November, well, it is November 7th because you wake up and you find out who the president was or is, and you're like, hey, I don't give a shit. You know why? Because they both suck. They got the same fucking policies, right? And so then what you got to do, the important thing is not who you voted for. It is kind of important whether or not you sold yourself out because it kind of tells you where you're going to stand in the future battles, right? If you're like a fucking sellout or someone who's like a stand-up person who actually believes in something. But November 7th, you know, you got to stand up, you know, straighten yourself out, and you got to report to your party headquarters, whichever party that happens to be, and say, hey, what in the hell just happened? What was with that disaster, that catastrophe over there? Okay, so even if Romney wins, you're like, I don't give a shit about this guy. What's he going to do about Obamacare? I don't know. What is his position? Okay, so I was holding the pom-poms. I was shutting my eyes. I was, you know, hear no evil, see no evil. I was pretending this guy was actually good because I hated Obama so much. What the hell is he going to do? Okay, so now I can ask some real questions, right? You better start doing that because if you go home, you can go to hell. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, because you're done. You're done.
Yeah.
And you should stop participating in the political process.
Exactly. And I don't want to hear any bullshit from anybody. And if you hear any bullshit from anybody, you call them. I'm not really interested in politics. First of all, you're an American, so you're supposed to be interested in politics because you're participating in the process. You're a sovereign. You're not a subject. And two, you cannot be not interested in politics, because I assure you, politics is very interested in you, your wallet, your house, what kind of water you use to flush your toilet, and what kind of irritating light bulb you stick in your light fixture. You brought up Obamacare, which I thought was very interesting, because Romney said, Obamacare is not affordable. Now, that might be the only factual thing that he actually said. And I know that that Romney knows that Obamacare is not affordable because Obamacare is essentially a larger scale Romney care. And Romney is fully aware that's not affordable because he had to have hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money to balance the budget with his Romney care. The problem when you make Romney care nationwide is when it hits those massive trillions in deficit, where are you going to get the money to make it work? Obviously, they're going to get it from Ben Bernanke.
Yeah, well, I bring it up for a specific reason, because somebody asked me, you know, actually, maybe it was this morning, yesterday. Yeah, it was this morning. God, I don't know, long day, man, very long day. but they said, well, you know, who do you think is going to win in November? I said, well, you know, the way it looks right now, I think Romney's going to win, right? And they said, okay, well, that's good. Well, what does that mean for Obamacare? I don't know. I think Romney likes Obamacare. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he's the grandfather of Obamacare, so I don't think he's really going to change it. I mean, he said there's parts of Obamacare I like.
Yeah.
Because I totally passed it when I was governor, so I got no problem with it. And I said the real thing's going to come down to is John Boehner going to be Speaker of the House, because John Boehner's fucking useless. What do you think? Mitt Romney's going to work with John Boehner to, like, change Obamacare? No. None of that's going to happen. So what's going to happen if Romney gets elected? What's going to happen with Obamacare? I don't fucking know. Nobody knows.
I do.
You find a pig in a poke.
It's going to go through. They'll tinker around the edges.
Exactly.
They'll tinker around the edges, but the plan is in place, and basically it is the tertiary step towards a single-payer system, because they intend to control the land through Agenda 21, your movement through the police state, the drones, and all those 360-degree cameras that are allegedly designed to catch red light runners. They're going to they already control all the economy with the Federal Reserve having control of the currency. And once they nail it down with control of healthcare, they control your very life. And now you are no longer a sovereign citizen.
We got to get to the callers. But I just want to say that red light camera thing is insane because down here in Houston, we voted them out. We're like, hey, fuck these red light cameras. You know what the city said? They're like, no.
Yep.
We had a fucking election. We said, no, we don't want these things. They're like, oh, yeah, but we signed a contract, and we'll get a big fine if we cancel the contract. Okay, cancel the fucking contract, okay? I don't care how much money you got to pay because you're borrowing money to pay for – now they're going to build bike paths all over this fucking place, right? Oh, we need $30 billion of bike paths. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, let's float them along for all these bike paths we're going to have because everybody in Houston rides bikes everywhere. The city has a 60-mile fucking diameter. Who's riding bikes 60 miles? Fuck, what is Lance Armstrong? Fuck Lance Armstrong. The dude was joking. You know, okay? We're not doing that. You know, but it's these red light cameras. Like, oh, it's a $19 million fine. Who cares? $19 million is cheap. I mean, just get rid of it. Anyway, let's bring the money. The money goes
to the seller of those machines, and the controlling power goes to your local authority, which under the NDAA 1021 and 1023 has essentially been federalized. Our first caller, Tex, is a mild-mannered Marine who is also the vice chair of the Constitution Party. And, Randy, you are live with Tex and Rex. Did you watch the quiz show tonight between Obama and Romney? Randy. Okay. He's so mild-mannered. All right, we'll come back to Randy. Next caller that we have is from area code 954. 954, you're live with Tex and Rex. Did you watch the quiz show between Romney and Obama tonight?
I have no comments. I'm just listening.
Hi, Harriet. How are you?
Hello, Harriet.
I'm fine. You're troublemaker of the year.
Sorry about us.
This is Tex and Rex.
I'm not.
We're always troublemakers, Harry. You know that.
All right, I'll go ahead and
put you back on mute. Hit me up in chat. I'll periodically take a look at it if you want to get back on.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Harry. Thanks for listening.
All right.
And then our next caller, Tex, is none other than the host of Constitutional Conservatives Unite, Sam Sanford. Sammy, you're live with Tex and Rex, but we're not in the Chinese water torture room today.
Hey, Sammy. Well, I felt like it today, actually.
Hey,
Dana.
Hey, Rex. I mean, y'all are awesome. I'm sitting here listening to the show, and I watched the debate tonight. I watched the doo-wop of two idiots debating each other, and both of them have worthless arguments. I mean, they're idiots. And for these dumb assholes that want to go out there and vote for Mitt Romney, because they're being told by the RNC that they got to go out and vote for him? What stupid sheeple. Hey, Dan, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was, you know, it's that I was on the East Coast too long thing. So, you know, if there's like even a second of silence, someone must jump in and rescue it. trying to get back into the southern thing where, you know, you can have a period of silence and it's okay. But, yeah, I mean, oh, okay, so we're going to vote Romney because he's going to save us from Obama. Well, you know, it's like that Simpsons episode, you know. You can only vote for Kang or Kodos, you know, and Kang gets elected. And somebody's like, well, don't blame me. I voted for Kodos, right? Well, who cares? You know, like an alien race can enslave the planet in that Simpsons episode. Same thing, you know. I mean, they don't.
Yeah.
There's no disagreement. That's what people are not seeing. All they're seeing is there's a different person in the office, but they're not seeing that there is no disagreement in the argument. If you go look and if you go read the transcripts, just read the freaking thing and think about it, right? Like in the vice presidential debates, right? Ryan is going on about Afghanistan and how he wouldn't have pulled the troops out, right? And Biden says, well, hey, we pulled the troops out of, like, this one part of Afghanistan, right? And he's like, yeah, now there's no U.S. troops there. And he's like, yeah, because we sent Afghan troops in there to do the job. And then you go read Romney's foreign policy speech where he talks about the Afghanistanization of the war. It's the same policy. And Paul Ryan goes on about 2014, I wouldn't have announced the date. He's like, well, do you have a problem with the date? Are you going to stay longer than the date? And Ryan's like, well, no, I agree with the date. I just wouldn't have announced it. But they talk about it for 5 minutes. If you boil it down, that's what he's saying. Like, I wouldn't have said what the date was. But then Biden says, which is true, that we got 49 allies there. You know, like El Salvador is actually, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's actually El Salvadorians in fucking Afghanistan, right? And they're just sitting around like, I don't know, what am I doing here? You know, you got burritos thrown up in this thing, I don't know. You know, maybe they're doctors or something, they're just hanging out on the base like, man, did I draw the short straw? I really wish I hadn't sworn at that guy, you know. But you can't just pull out and then just, like, leave the El Salvadorans there or something, you know. Or
hey, we didn't
want to
announce a date, so screw you.
Yeah, or, like, the Japanese
exactly
are there.
Right.
The Japanese are there. They're playing on PlayStations 24/7. You know, they've got some Donkey Kong action going on. And you can't just pull out and just leave them there. So you have to tell them, like, look, we're going to get out by this day, right? So you guys need to start making plans. Well, if you tell 49 nations, guess what? They're going to go tell their country, hey, by the way, the Americans are getting out at this time. And so you know what? It starts this whole, this is what the withdrawal date is. And so that's why they announced it. Okay, so what Romney Ryan is saying is, oh, we wouldn't have announced the date. Okay, well, you know, maybe it wasn't a good idea to announce the date. But, you know, if you got to tell 49 other people, it's probably going to come out, you know. And maybe you don't want to have it sprung on you by El Salvador leaked the news, and now you look like an idiot because you didn't have the strength to say it.
Yep.
Anyway.
That's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, there's no difference. Because, listen, if that scenario had just had what I just talked about where El Salvador said what the date was, then the president didn't tell the American people, wouldn't Sean Hannity be up there? And he wouldn't even level with the American people. We got to find out from the El Salvadorians, you know, GD America, US of KKKA, you know, Reverend Wright, you know, all this, everything that that guy reads off. I mean, come on, it would be on the freaking list. You know it.
Yep, yep,
I mean,
absolutely.
Quit thinking about your damn team and start thinking about what's actually going on.
Especially those poor El Salvadorans, because, I mean, the first one that landed in Afghanistan, I mean, he was just there, and all of a sudden it was like,
this can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
Well, and y'all remember when one of the very first medic teams from the Japanese units went to Afghanistan, they got butchered by Al-Qaeda and by the, what do you call the other idiots
the
there?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, y'all remember that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they hijacked these people, and they took them off and raped the women and killed the men, and they wind up killing the whole medical crew there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, Tammy, the problem is that, you know, people kind of don't understand, and this is especially true for us all the way over here, where we really haven't had military conflicts in our backyard since 1864. And I can tell you that because 60% of those battles took place right where I'm sitting right now. Other than the 9/11 attacks, which were not really a military attack, obviously it was an attack on a civilian target and terrorism, we haven't really experienced this. So sometimes we forget what war is really like, but most of the rest of the world is very familiar with it. And that's precisely why we have to be far more cautious when we engage in military conflicts. And the Founding Fathers gave us a system that would make sure that would happen. They put the war power in Congress, which brings it closer to the people because you've got your local, you know, district congressman who's going to have to vote on this. And then you give that power to the president to prosecute the war because once, you know, war by committee does not work. You have to have one man making the decisions or you will always lose your conflict. But that man is not the one who declares the war. The king used to declare the war, and he used to prosecute it and basically raid the wealth of the people in order to finance it. And that's precisely what the failure of
the monarchies of the High Middle Ages that were relatively successful led to the absolutism of the early modern era, and then, of course, the rise of democracy. So our founding fathers were very aware of the dangers of giving the king the power of the purse and the king the power of the gun or the sword. So that's why the power is invested in Congress. But once you engage in war, there certainly are rules, and we are a moral and just people, so we will try to engage in that conflict responsibly. But ultimately, as soon as you let that cat out of the bag, and we've been engaged in perpetual war for nearly 60 years, once you do that, you always have to remember the ancient paradigm of warfare, because it will always be prevalent, especially in tribal areas like Afghanistan and Iraq. And if you go back to the age of barbarism, when you realize what war is, it can be summed up very, very easily by our favorite barbarian.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
That is good.
That's what you have to think about before you start a war.
But, and Rex, let me interject this here. Two things. We went in there to get Al-Qaeda. Yes, the president has a right to do immediate military action to respond to a military attack in which we were attacked. But we're now working on, what, 11 years or 12 years, 11 years now in Afghanistan. There has never been an official declaration of war. The second thing is that we're propping up these drug lords that produce heroin to destroy our kids.
That's right.
And I mean,
that's right.
I mean,
absolutely, Sammy. I mean, look, two things happened.
It's outrageous.
Congress back then, I was in D.C. when this happened, not that I had anything to do with it, but this is a topic of conversation. This is one of the first times I really came across it and began to advance a Ron Paul argument unknowingly, which is, how the hell did Congress transfer its war-making power over to the president, right? Because Congress is too cowardly to actually have to take a stance, to have to stand up for the fact that they thought it was worth declaring war on Afghanistan, right? Let me tell you, if you don't have the balls to declare war on Afghanistan after 9/11, who the fuck are you? You know,
yeah.
Who elected you? How did you get in office? You know,
perfect.
I don't know. It seems like a risky proposition. So let's just, you know, unconstitutionally transfer our war-making power over to the president. So that seems like a better idea to me, you know, because I'm clever, right? Well, okay, what if the Supreme Court, they had that whole, you know, oh, what's going to go on with the, you know, presidential election 2000? This seems complicated. I mean, I don't want to – this could undermine our authority if we decided this. So you know what? We're just going to rule that – why don't we let the Senate decide this? We'll just unconstitutionally transfer our final decision authority, you know, over to the Senate, right? I mean, branches of the – separate branches of the government can't transfer their authority to another separate branch of the government. That's inherently the problem. They wouldn't declare war because they're cowards, and they didn't want to have to take a politically unpopular stance or what they thought might be later on, and so they just transferred the freaking authority over. And with respect to the drug trade over there, they got over there.
I am breaking.
Yeah. When they got over there, they're like, hey,
they're
breaking
authority.
I got a great idea. Why don't we build a nation called Afghanistan? Hey, it'll be the greatest nation anybody's ever heard of in Central Asia. We'll get a flag. We get a catchy tune. Something with maybe a banjo in the background, some whistling going on, you know? Something that everybody could dig, you know? And so they start doing that. Like, hey, but we got to get an economy going. Like, wow, what do we produce here in Afghanistan? Mostly heroin. It's like, okay, let's get that heroin crop up, everybody. Everybody ready to go? Diggity, 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 you know? I mean, that's what they did. Literally.
Yep.
Why are we not dropping napalm on these poppy fields?
Because we're supposed to be protecting them, Sammy. We're protecting those poppy fields because the CIA is one of the largest distributors of heroin in the world, and they have our military boys and girls over there protecting the poppy fields. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And to Tex's point about the, you know, Congress being a bunch of pussies who are afraid to declare war, so they abdicate their authority without a proper Article 5 transfer, which would be impossible to accomplish, we haven't declared war formally. since 1942, and we declared war on Bulgaria. But we're afraid, like Tex said, to declare war on Afghanistan. Now, ostensibly, Afghanistan is kind of problematic. I mean, even Alexander the Great had some problems there, and even Attila the Hun had problems. Afghanistan is a very rugged, mountainous terrain. It's very difficult to prosecute a military campaign there. But we shouldn't have had any problem because our intent when we went in there, even though it was undeclared, it was still just because we were attacked and they were harboring al-Qaeda. Our intent was to go in there, kill the Taliban, kill al-Qaeda, and leave. Trying to hold that nation and, quote, build it and police it is an impossible task.
What do you mean, it is nation, Timo Savi?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of the least developed places on the planet for a reason. And it isn't, and the text is 100% right. What do you mean, nation, Kimasabi? It is a bunch of local tribes that have this seventh century mentality. They don't understand federalism. They don't understand order. They don't know that Kabul is the capital. They could care less because it all goes to the head of the tribe, whoever it happens to be at that time. That's the final authority. And our young men and women are over there being used as a policing force, protecting the poppy fields, and essentially trying to help these people federalize their country, which is an impossible task, and we should have never, ever taken it on. With that, gentlemen, I'm going to open up the phone for another guest, and that is none other than the host of Bard's Logic Political Talk, Robert Jetter. Robert, you're on with Tex and Rex and Sammy.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Here, let me go ahead and bow out. I need to get off the phone. I need to go lay back down.
Okay. I hear from you, Sammy.
Thanks for calling in, Sammy, and dial in whenever you want.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me. We will have a show later this week, hopefully.
Great.
Right now, we're just dealing with other issues, and God bless the great United States of America, our great republic. We are not a democracy. We are a republic. And God bless you, gentlemen, and love you, Robert. Love you, Rex. Love you, Tex. Love you, Randy. And we are not shutting up. I'm just because of personal issues and other issues, we're toning it down really low. But we will be back loud and proud. My Facebook pages are not gone, and they can be re-upped. But we are here, and we're not backing down. God bless you, gentlemen.
And God bless Harriet. She is
thanks,
awesome.
Sammy.
Take care, Sammy.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Sammy Sanford of Constitutional Conservatives Unite. And he said he will be putting up a show later this week, which is good to hear. I'm glad to know that Sammy is still in the fight with all the struggles that he has, and that shows you what true American spirit and patriotism is all about. And just a quick reminder, Bard's Logic Political Talk broadcasts from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Sunday through Thursday. And your irreverent hosts, Tex and Rex, will be back tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern following the real presidential debate. That's the free and equal debate. So check us out tomorrow night, same bat time, same bat channel. All right, Robert, to you.
Thank you, Rex. And later on, if you could just send me some Sammy's home phone. I only have a cell phone right now. Couldn't get a hold of him the other day. I really would have liked to, but I only have the one number. So at some point, if you could do that, I'd really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, it was a great discussion tonight with Jim Clymer going over the BP questions that Biden and Ryan discussed. But, of course, I think this was much more interesting. Of course, I didn't watch the debate tonight to really speak much of it. But tomorrow night, with the free and equal debate, I'm working on getting that type piped in to Bard's Logic tomorrow night from 9 to 11. And then after that, folks come over here to get the analysis and discussion on it. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's been a long time coming. Looks like a few other stations, at least on the internet and some on TV, are beginning to pick the debate up. And I find it good timing that it's going to be, I believe, the last debate before the election. Am I correct in that?
I think they're actually having another one next week, Robert. Tomorrow night is the first free and equal debate, and I believe there is one next week as well.
Oh, great. That's awesome. That's good to hear. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that information.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's going to be two. Tomorrow night's debate is actually going to be moderated by Larry King. Some of you might remember him as the old guy with the suspenders who has a curmudgeonly attitude on CNN, who was there before Piers Morgan took that slot. So Larry King will be moderating the debate, which should be interesting. Nonetheless, it shows you that there is a significant interest in non-duopoly and non-establishment candidates because, you know, Larry King is not an unknown figure in political interviews. So that's a pretty powerful nod.
Right, right.
And you didn't miss much tonight, Robert. Basically, we had two guys who were in more or less complete agreement with the fact that we need more wars, more policing power, and more unconstitutional extensions of federal intrusion into our lives. And we got someone.
I would say that, you know, there's basically each candidate has a serious flaw. Well, they have multiple flaws. It's like looking at a diamond. Look at how screwed up this diamond is. Like everything about it, no matter how you turn it, it's bad. It's like, you know, there's a spider here and then like an ogre's eye. And then, you know, like it's just terrible. Okay, but Obama's problem is he's saying that, you know, he's just playing deflection. Well, you know, Romney says this, but he, you know, he's not telling the truth, right? Okay, whatever, jackass. You've been president for 4 years, okay? And America has sucked under you. You know, basically in every terms that we have dials to measure success, your performance has been shit-tacular, okay? So based on your shit-tacular performance, why exactly should we re-elect you, right? Well, we should re-elect you because Romney sucks ass and he's illegitimate and he's a piece of shit and he never should be the Republican nominee, and I hope he rots in hell forever. Fuck you, Mitt Romney. But he has not advanced a case as to why Barack Obama should be re-elected. What is he going to do in a second, you know, 4 years? That is the essential conundrum of Barack Obama, and here's why I think he's going to lose, because he didn't do that tonight. You know why? Because he doesn't have a vision, because he doesn't know. You know why? Because I think he knows he's not going to win. They just told him, like, dude, you know, just hang it up. Just I wouldn't even bother. You know, just, I don't know, just
and
mail
you,
it in, man.
Thanks for playing, and you win a lifetime supply of Titleist golf balls.
Yes, exactly.
And a Secret Service detail.
And Romney,
for all of you.
He kind of had a little smile on his face. Oh, go ahead, Rex. You were doing a thing.
Well, I was just going to say that for those of you playing at home, that was a technical and wonkish term that Tex was using. It is called shit-tacular. Go ahead, Tex.
Yes, it is. Shit-tacular. And so, you know, Romney's thing is, what is he going to do when he's in office? Well, guess what? Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes here again, because the guy hasn't said, and to the extent he has said, he's talked in general, you know, things where I'm going to reduce taxes by 20%, but I'm also going to reduce deductions. Well, taxes by 20% on who? You know, like the top tax rate is what, 38%, right? So the top individual tax rate is going to go from 38 to 18%. What about the bottom rate is 15%? So what, I have a negative 5 I'm getting, and you're paying me money? Do you know how much money in the hole you are, dude? Now, are you giving money out? What's going on? I mean, so nobody's paying taxes? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, look at, you got a progressive, what's called a progressive tax structure, where, you know, on the first whatever you make, you don't pay anything, and you probably get money back, right? And they give you your money back, like, dude, you're so broke, here's your money back. Sorry we took this from you, you know? We created this shit economy. You might as well have your money back. Sorry about
and
that.
And here's some other asshole's money to compensate for taking your money in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for playing, but damn. Dude, get some job training or something. Okay. And then you know, you make some more money. You know, look, I've got money back, okay? So, you know, I know what that's like. And I, when I got my money back, I was like, thank God, because, you know, I was young, college student, or I was out of college, I was working. I was like, damn, I'm not making anything, right? Well, welcome to New America. There's no more money. I don't know. We spent it all. Fuck you. So how are you going to reduce taxes by 20%? I mean, because he keeps saying by 20%, but how many rates are above 20%? And so what are we, everyone's coming down to 8%? But I'm going to make up for it by reducing deduction. So nothing is deductible? Because how the hell can you make that revenue up unless you make absolutely nothing deductible, okay? If nothing is deductible and you lowered your rate 20%, you're probably like, hey, it's pretty awesome because now it's not all that complicated because this is how much I made and this is how much I pay, so now I can go home, okay? Yeah, that's great. Well, when this douchebag gets out of office, or, you know, he doesn't have to get out of office because, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, kind of sold you out there, he basically raised taxes in 1990. So you know what? Mitt Romney may cut your taxes 20% and try to close the deductions, and in 2 years it's like, it turns out there's not enough deductions I can close to pay for it. So I'm raising your taxes by this amount. Because they always do that. But you know what? You're not getting your deductions back. That's how they screw you. It happens all the time.
Incremental theft of your rate.
You know what it is? You know what it is, Rex? It's a bad call, Ripley. It was a bad call.
It was a
bad
call.
That's what the
call,
tax plan
is. Yep. And the thing, here's some bad math, okay? Right now, if you're, say, in the 25% marginal rate, that doesn't mean you pay 25% of your income in taxes, but that's if you're calculating on the margin. If you're in the 25% rate, with the sunset provisions of the so-called Bush tax cuts coming up on January 1st, you'll be in the 28% rate. So your President Romney is going to cut your rate by 20%, is going to shave 5.6% off that and bring you down to the 22.4% tax rate. Right now you're at 25. So really, his 20% bullshit is simply reducing your rate by 2.6% from 25 to 22.4. And by taking away your deductions, you will get ass-raped in that 2.6%, because when you lose your mortgage deduction and your other deductions, then you're really actually going to have an effectively higher total tax rate under Romney's tax cut plan than you do now. So don't believe these guys when they tell you anything. It is all smoke and mirrors. Whenever they do it, you will end up paying more. It's just like in your state, if you have a tax on, for instance, property like a vehicle or a boat, and people get pissed off about that, they say, we want that gone. They say, okay, well, let's go ahead and take that off the books. And then what they'll turn around and do is reassess your real estate property at a higher value and jack up the rate on that. The problem is that they just tinker around the edges of how much they're going to steal from you, because they think 100% of your money belongs to them, and they're allowing you to keep 70 or 80% of it. And then what they do is they never, ever talk about spending or reducing spending, so somehow they've either got to put you into more debt or take more of your tax dollars away. So what Tex said earlier is 100% right. It's a shit-tacular mess. Robert and Tex, I have – go ahead, Tex.
And, you know, I just want to say, look, do you have any clue how much money your government is spending? Okay, and they're like, oh, we can't cut this because we'd be cutting schools and we'd be cutting our children's future. No, you wouldn't. You'd be cutting some bureaucrat's pension. These bureaucrats are paid better than you. What are the richest counties in the United States of America? Ask yourself that. They are concentrated in and around Washington, D.C. Why?
Yep.
Because they're spending your money.
Mm-hmm.
That's your money. They're sucking money out of where you are, and they're plowing it right into that thing. Now, I know the Democrats are trying to say, oh, but the red states are the taker states because they're not contributing enough because they get more money than they receive. Look at the richest counties in the United States. They're in and around Washington, D.C., and you tell me who's taken and who ain't. All right?
The people in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and McLean, Virginia. That's who's taking.
And Fauquier County, not doing too bad. Prince George's doing pretty good, too, you know. All those guys all around, all of them doing better than the nation as a whole. You know why? Because they all got government salaries. And when I was in the government, they said, yeah, but, you know, the thing is, you're taking a pay cut by working here, but, you know, you're doing it for the public good. But if you were to go back to the public service, and you definitely make more money, but, you know, You're just here for the public. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, you can't. It doesn't even compare what they're making, because I got a pension because I work there. I got a pension, right? So you guys are going to pay for that. That's excellent. Thank you, guys. But, you know, by the way, I don't, you know, want to alarm you, but you're broke and you don't have any of this money that the government has signed you up for.
Yep.
And it's just, it's going away. That's the thing. And you keep giving it up and you keep giving it up and you keep thinking, well, I can only vote for one of these two guys, and maybe my one guy will be okay. And then you just go, and you fall in line, and you do what the leaders tell you to, and you don't show up to any of the meetings. You never complain. You do complain, but you complain to your friend, but that's okay because he doesn't have any power either, and he doesn't have anything to say. But you never go up, and you never talk to the people who are in the, quote, positions of power, because you know what? They're not in positions of power. They're in positions that you put them in, because you're the person who's bending down. You're the person who's complying.
Mm-hmm.
Quit doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Because you are overwhelming. Your voice of compliance and go along with the leadership is what's killing the country, because there are people who are willing to change their mind and stand up and actually start saying, hey, what's going on here? Because I think there actually is a problem with this election, which is they thought that they could so beat down the American people with bad economic times that they would vote for someone, anyone, who would save them from the horrible Barack Obama. But what they realized is they so beat down the American people that the American people are like, what the hell is going on?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do about this? You know, mm-hmm. I don't believe in either of these two parties, and they certainly were not expecting that. And like, well, nobody can question the game, right? So we got to change the game up. Like, people really hate this Barack Obama guy. I mean, they really seem to hate him. Let's just get rid of Barack Obama, and we'll replace him with this Mitt Romney guy, and then maybe that'll placate everyone, right? But it's not working. Maybe it's working for you guys out there in radio land, but certainly not working for me.
Texas working because these losers keep failing upwards to more and more power because we give them that power, and it's the power of apathy. When we stay home, when we're quiet, when we don't complain to those who need to hear the complaint, when we don't vote them out, when we don't show up at the meetings and remove them from their chairmanships and their boards, this is what happens. And so the simple fact is that the fact that we only go in and pull the lever once every 2 or once every 4 years, even though we have elections every single year, and we just pick, you know, lesser evil A or lesser evil B, and all we do is get more evil because we don't step out of line and we don't tell them that we're displeased and we want something better. It is our apathy that is giving these guys the opportunity to keep failing upwards and screwing the country up more and more. So you've got to get involved and remember something. The morning of November 7th, no matter what the hell happens, whichever one of these two fools wins, okay, we lose. The victor of tonight's debate and the victor of the election will be Goldman Sachs. If you don't get up off your ass, put the Cheetos down, turn off the Xbox and the Dancing with the Stars, and get to your local meetings, whether it's in one of the parties like the Libertarian Party or the Constitution Party or the Republican Party or even the Democratic Party, because they're screwing you up too and they're disregarding their delegates. If you don't make these changes starting November 7th, you won't have a shot in 2014 and 2016. The work starts immediately. Go ahead.
I got a quick rule of thumb. If you like how the country's going and the cliff that we're heading off of, and you think, hey, this is going to be awesome because I could totally, like, splinter my teeth on the rocks below and maybe get me a, you know, really boss set of new teeth in the form of dentures or something, go ahead and go to those meetings and be real quiet. But if you hate where you're going and – if I'm assuming you're a Republican, that's why you're listening to this show, or a former recovering Republican, you know, maybe you want to raise your hand and say, hey, I don't like that freaking rhino we ran and how you totally betrayed and sold out everything that this party ever said that it stood for. In the future, is it your plan to continue selling us down the river to these fucking rhino assholes who don't believe in anything but themselves? I'll sit down now and listen for your answer. If you don't start doing that, I mean, it's done. What, you don't have the courage to do that? Oh, what if my neighbors turned to me and they thought ill of me? Who the hell? I mean, do you even know your neighbors? Who knows their neighbors anymore? What, you're going to go to this meeting of a bunch of Republicans? Half the people in there are thinking what you're thinking. Hey, by the way, you know, Mr. Chairman, you know, go to hell, and I hate the speech you just gave and fuck Mitt Romney. This, I heard you say Mitt Romney. I got small children. I don't want you swearing near my children. Please do not say the word Mitt Romney. That's not allowed in our house. That is disgusting and vile, okay? Freaking rhinos. We cannot hear the names of these rhinos. But I want to know, what is the future of this party? How are you going to bring us out of the darkness and into the light? You know, how are we going to fix this thing? Because we can't keep running these kind of guys. We had real candidates this time. We had Newt Gingrich. I mean, Newt, the man. This is his party. What are we doing? Why didn't we run him? That guy would have been fantastic, right? Even if Romney won. So what? Still Romney won. That's not a victory. Oh, my God. Now Romney's the president. Oh, my God. How is he going to compromise and sell us out this time? I can't even trust him, you know?
Yep.
We had Ron Paul. We had real Republicans. We had people who believed in freedom, liberty, limited government. You say you believe in that. Why are you forcing this guy down my throat? What you can't – I mean, what burns me is that people across the country, they don't have the strength of character to go to these meetings and say that stuff. You'd rather sit at home and watch the country burn than go to a meeting of a bunch of people you don't even know and stand up and say, what in the hell is going on? I don't like this.
Exactly. Tex is absolutely right. You need the courage. Instead of running around and just yelling,
now what the fuck are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty shit now, man.
Go to the meetings and stand up and say, I am Spartacus. Because if you have the guts and the courage, because you know what's going on, to get up and stand up, I guarantee you that at least 70% of the voters will stand up with you because you've encouraged them and given them permission to actually say what they're thinking about saying but they're afraid to say. You have to be the courage. And speaking of courage, we have a mild-mannered Marine who is also the vice president of, sorry, not the vice president, the vice chair of the Constitution Party on the line. Randy, you are live with Tex and Rex.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Randy.
Good evening.
Good evening. Well, gentlemen, the primary reason why I called in is I've got something I just want to rub into all y'all's face. I am going to the debate tomorrow night. So I am going to be there live, seeing it all.
That's good.
Well, Randy.
That's going to be awesome.
Randy, unless you want Tex and Rex to come over there and kick your Marine behind, you need to call in tomorrow night and give us a commentary from live viewing of the real presidential debate.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah,
I
got to dial in.
You know what? Rather than coming over here getting your ass kicked, why don't you come over here and go to the debate with me?
Well, that would be a wonderful and exciting thing to do, but I'm actually in a FEMA camp that is called the Capitol Beltway around Washington, D.C. I can't get out. I mean, it's no-fly zone. We've got barbed wire. There's drones flying overhead. I'm in District 3, and I can't leave.
Oh, man. Hey, it sounds like you need a Marine to come and storm the gates.
I need Snake Plissken to get me out.
Well, Randy, I will tell you, I got the transcript of the third-party debate that was done by the Fair and Equal people after the, I guess it was the second presidential debate where they showed the answers from Romney and Obama, and then they let everyone else answer.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well,
Democracy Now.
Actually, that was done by the Democracy
Now
or
Now.
Whatever TV.
Yeah.
Democracy Now.
That actually was really good. I read the transcript, and Bertha Good's answers were awesome. I mean, I was like, yeah. And, you know, the one lady from the Green Party, she was like, everything was like, we have a green jobs program. I'm like, yeah, there's no market. You have a subsidized jobs for a subsidized industry. There's not enough subsidies in the world to start an industry that doesn't exist. Just pouring money down a rat hole. And then that other guy from the Justice Department, or Party, I forget what his name is, but let's not
Rocky Anderson.
Oh, yeah, let's. Screw that guy. Anyway, those were some of the most brain dead answers ever I've seen.
I was trying
job.
to. It's been a few days since I heard it. I actually, you know, it was done on video, so you can actually go to YouTube,
yeah.
I think, and watch the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his last Rocky's last his parting shot, closing comments, absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there was such a confusion of ideas in his answers. It literally was difficult to sort out what the hell he was trying to say.
Well,
you know, and you're like, there's already a candidate who doesn't know what he's running for. His name's Mitt Romney, you know, so.
but seriously, you know, the guy says, the most important thing is for us to get a handle on this global warming. I'm like, climate change, really?
Yeah.
Well, Randy,
if you believe that's true, how is that not like number 912 on the list of things to get done?
Oh, my God.
Randy, I actually used to work for the Department of Energy, which actually has a lot to do with this stupid global warming thing. And, you know, so I have friends who are like, oh, you don't believe in global warming. You're some kind of a apostate. I'm like, no. You can check the temperature record. It is warming, all right? But what's the cause, right? So the cause, obviously, is the decline of disco, because ever since disco records stopped being sold, the temperature has risen. Clearly.
Yes, we were in global cooling back then.
Buy more disco.
Disco inferno, baby. Disco inferno.
Back in the 70s, Tex, it was global cooling they were afraid of when they were playing disco. But the funny thing is that all these global warming crazy nuts never, ever really complain about the giant thermonuclear reactor in the sky, which is probably the cause of the warming. So I suppose if we outlaw the sun, then we could get a rain on this global warming thing.
Well,
maybe that's what Rocky Anderson's next mission
is. This is the coup de grace with this whole global warming thing. Okay? So let's say that there is anthropogenic climate change, meaning man-genic, you know,
mm-hmm.
coming from climate change. Okay? So anthropogenic climate change, we're causing it, right? Okay, so what do we do, right? What do? Do you actually
Stop
believe
farting.
That there is a government agency that if you give it enough money, if you give this government agency enough money, it can actually change the temperature of the planet? You can regulate the sun, and the sun will just obey the regulation? That's not going to happen.
Didn't
it's
Egyptians
not gonna
do that?
Happen.
Didn't the ancient Egyptians do that with Ra? That worked out.
And
really
the other thing about the oceans rising and falling, let me tell you how you know about the oceans rising and falling, because this information didn't fall out of the sky, right? It turns out the rising and falling of the ocean actually happens with certain periodicities, right? And these periodicities turn out to be very significant if you're in particular industries, right? Because if the oceans rise and fall, when they rise, and there's a whole bunch of small single-cell organisms named protists and foraminifera that live in the seas, and they live and they die and they breathe and they make thousands more, and their shells fall to the ground and they form calcium carbonate, which turns into coral reefs and everything. Turns out millions of years later, if you actually know where the oceans used to be, you can go drill the shit out of them and make like $10 million a day on a single freaking well, right? So who told everybody that the oceans rose and fell? The oil industry did, because it's their business to know what the ancient sea levels were and where the oceans were and where the rivers were and all that kind of stuff. The oil industry taught you all of this stuff. The oceans always rise and fall. You're not causing it, and you're not going to stop it. And the fact that you can is laughable. King Canute, when he took over England, right, the people said, King Canute, you're the greatest, like, freaking king ever because you took over England and all this kind of stuff, and you're fantastic and everything. And if you commanded the oceans to stop rising, the oceans would stop rising. And he said, okay, pick up my throne and take me out to the ocean. So they picked out his throne, they took him out to the ocean, and he commanded the waves to stop. And you know what? They didn't. Because he didn't take him out there to prove that he could do it. He took him out there to prove that he could not. But yet the Al Gores of the world think that they can. And the Green Movement thinks that they can. And that is a very confused and very dangerous movement, because they don't understand. They claim that they believe in nature and the power of nature, but yet they think they have control over nature. And they don't. That's their conceit.
Well, the one kind of bizarre thing was, to me, was that it was Rocky Anderson who came up with that and not Jill Stein.
Yep.
Yeah, he came up with it at the end.
Jill Stein, did you notice she's all about her Green Jobs Program. Which,
yeah.
$23 million.
Stalinist Public Works Program.
$23 million, she claims.
Yep.
That voice you all are hearing in the background, which is unrecognizable because he hasn't been properly introduced, that is Chris, a.k.a. Trog, from the Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. I recommend you all check that out. And interestingly, you brought up King Canute text, because in Middle English, Al Gore actually means retarded son, which is very interesting because I was actually hiking in the mountains. I live near the Appalachian Mountains. I was hiking the Appalachian Trail, and I found something that looked suspiciously like a seashell, because it turns out at some point in the recent past in geological time, the top of the Appalachian Mountains was actually the bottom of the ocean. So, anyway.
Well, that couldn't have been due to the flood within the Old Testament, though.
No. I grew up, my dad is a environmental health physicist, so I've grown up in a geologist, so I've grown up with this stuff my whole life. And one thing that I've always tried to explain to people, and I have the map on my wall in my office in my house, of Southeast Alaska. And there was a separate mini ice age that occurred in the coastal range of Southeast Alaska after the Great Ice Age melted back. And on this map, it shows where all the glaciers used to be when the first seafaring explorers went to Alaska in the late 1700s, the 1800s, and it showed the glacial meltback throughout Southeast Alaska from this little mini ice age. There are so many different factors to climate. And these people, that when they talk about this little mini ice age up there, which I lived up there 21 years, so, and we had an ice field behind our city, you know, the Juneau ice field with over 100 glaciers coming off of it. And these glaciers have been melting back for over 250, 300 years. Now, here's what's interesting is nobody talks about the damn currents in the ocean either. They change. One of the reasons that we have rainforest and glaciers in the coastal range of Alaska, especially British Columbia southeast and up around the belt, what I call the belly of Alaska, is because the fan current brings that warm current of water up there. That moisture rises, hits those cold mountains, and it snows 100 plus feet a year in these mountains. It's there are so many factors to environmental issues that nobody talks about. All they want to do is scare the crap out of you, you know, so that they can sell you,
catch
you, and sell you a product. Go ahead.
What's real quick? What's the price of natural gas going to be next week?
Good question.
Yeah,
depends on how many beans we can eat, right?
But yet they know with a to the 10,000th decimal what the temperature is going to be in 100 years, so much so that if you say, hey, I don't think the temperature is going to be that, they're going to shout you down and call you, you know, a climate change denier, like you're a Holocaust denier. You know, mm-hmm. you deny the temperature 100 years from now, how dare you, you know? I mean,
you know,
fuck
crazy.
This shit.
You know what
I'm
you say
sorry,
to them when they do that
it.
To you, Tex? Text, when they come at you and they say you're a global warming denier, you just look at them and you pull your best Spicoli and you say,
you dick!
Well, and also, folks, you know, we got to worry about them chemtrails affecting our climate now, too.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Don't even. I swear to God,
this show
is talking about chemtrails.
We're way far down the rabbit hole, Randy, but we are not. We are a chemtrail-free show, so you can go to Paul Bott Radio if you want to talk about chemtrails.
I have a good number to report to you guys.
Please do.
You ready? All right. After each one of these debates, CNN has done a poll, and the first one, 47% of the people said neither. The second one, it was 50% said neither. So after the third date, they did a poll, and guess what? 24 Obama, 25 Romney, neither. 50%.
1%
Randy.
Randy or Jenna Jameson? I mean, it
so
is a poll,
they
right?
They can't poll this. They cannot move people. There's 50% of this nation says neither. They both suck.
We want another option.
I just wanted to go on record. I was one of the first people to say I hate these guys. I hate them. I hate them all. I'm not
going
to vote for them. They
okay,
suck.
Folks.
I'm not
here's
doing
the question.
It anymore.
Where are those 50%? I want to frickin' meet them. All I meet is, you're going to split the vote. We got to vote for Romney to get Obama out of there. I want to meet that 50%.
Well, see, the 50% that are saying this, Randy, are the 50% that smell something going on but just are so fed up with it that they're just not as involved as the rest of us. So we've got to grab them and get them in because, you know, politics is not a spectator sport in America. It is live. Gentlemen, we're in the last 10 minutes of live time. But it seems like we're having a pretty good conversation, and Robert and Chris have just got on with Randy, so I think we're going to go ahead and take this into recording time because it's we're definitely radioactive tonight. So I'm gonna kind of let you guys have at it, but I do want to reserve 2 minutes of live time to say goodnight to our listeners, and then we can go into recording time. And folks, for you who lose us in 10 minutes. Always check out the archives. You can download the MP3 and email it to people who may not be aware and just tell them to have an open mind and listen to some of the things we're talking about. Maybe it'll give them a different perspective and they can get active in our process because it is very important that we get really active and adhere to the Constitution and be involved in politics and get these parties thinking the right way because we need multiple parties that are expressing constitutional opinions in order for us to have the proper debate. And you can always go above the graphic and right below the icon of the show and click the follow button, and you will get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile and whatever email you have it linked to so you'll know when we are broadcasting. And just as a quick reminder, Tex and Rex traditionally broadcast Sunday, Monday, and Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. However, on debate days like today and tomorrow, we go live at 11 following the debate. So please join us tomorrow night, 11 p.m. Eastern, for a post-debate analysis with the real debate, the free and equal debate with the four, quote, third-party candidates. And please, you can also listen to the archives and follow Bard's Logic Political Talk hosted by Robert Jetter. So with that, we've got about 8 minutes of live time left. I'm going to throw it to Robert first and then whoever else wants it. Robert, go ahead.
Thank you, Rex, and thanks for the promo for Bard's Logic Political Talk. I really appreciate that. Yeah, one thing I've said on multiple occasions that the people have heard here is that, you know, if you always do what you've always done, you're always going to get what you've already got. And I think the 50% that, you know, Chris brought up and Randy's like, I want those 50%, I want to talk to the 50%, is I think that's a realization that I think they really need to come to. They know that they're is, you know, as I said, smell something, but what are they going to do about it? I think the first part of that is, yes, you got to realize that if we continue, I mean, really realize it, really think, look, I have to do something about it. I have to be a part of doing something about it, because if we do, if we just continue on with this duopoly, and I mean, I was a staunch, you know, one-party Republican, you know, for since I was, you know, a kid. And I'm 41 years old now, and so over half my life, you know, Republicans, Republicans, Republicans. But that's because I used to think the Republican Party was the party of principles. Well, I've got a rude awakening in 2012 that's not the case. And so what am I going to do about it? I mean, I could continue and just fall in line, or I could, you know, do something different. And I think there's 50%. If they do want a change and they see that there should be one, they're at least they're putting in polls, 50% doesn't want either one of them, well, then instead of when you scratch in that box or pull that lever or whatever way you vote, instead of doing that for one of the two in the duopoly, then vote with a third party that more fits your conscience than either one of them. Because all you're doing by voting for Romney or Obama is just, you know, helping to keep the current paradigm alive. And also, you know, you just, you know, perpetrate, you know, perpetuity of this two-party duopoly system. If you just keep on doing it, you're going to have to do something different. It may be uncomfortable. You may get called, you know, all kinds of names and things of that. But so what? I mean, what is that compared
Robert,
where we're at in this nation?
Robert,
yes.
I think we're in similar positions, which is, look, I grew up a Republican. I would always be a Republican. I never I wouldn't even consider not being a Republican. I campaigned for Bob Dole, for God's sakes. Bob Dole, I campaigned for that guy. Door to door.
Yeah, good point.
You know, I mean, you talk about lost souls and knocking on doors. Hey, Bob Dole. You know, but, you know, look,
yeah.
So I never questioned, you know. And look, I left D.C., and I'll tell you, when I left D.C., I was pretty disillusioned, all right, because, you know, you don't look that close into the beast's eyes, and you're just like, there's no hope. You know, there's just no hope. You know, how do I as one man fix this thing, right? Because you're by yourself, you know, and you got all these principles and all these ideas, but people keep falling in line. And so this, I'm telling you guys, this is actually what happens when people go to D.C., all right? Why did I go to D.C.? I went to D.C. because Newt Gingrich inspired me, because he said, if you hate the way the media is and if you hate the way Washington is, conservatives need to go there. You know why? Because that's leadership. And so Newt Gingrich as a leader inspired me to go to Washington, D.C., and I went to Washington, D.C. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to find my little pond, and I'm going to fix it, right? That's what I'll do. Now, it's not like I'm going to go in and just arbitrarily find shit to fix, but, you know, when things are generally fine and everything, that's okay. But if there's a problem, I'm going to be the guy who's like, hey, what the fuck's going on here, you know? And so the thing is, sometimes you stumble across something really big, you know, the Kraken. Oh, shit, I stumbled across the Kraken, right? And sure enough, I kind of did. And that thing kind of locks eyes with you, and you're like, hey, I'm not backing down. Because what are you going to do to me? Seriously, what are you going to do? Okay, you can make my life unpleasant, but you know what? My life's been unpleasant before, so, you know, I can get through this. But the thing is, at the back of your mind, it's like, who's behind me? Right?
Yep.
And if people keep selling out everything, right, and just going along with the leadership, you keep putting these people up there, and you're asking them to go fight with this fucking thing, the Kraken, right? I'll just call it that for the purposes of this conversation. But I've looked that thing in the eye. It'll destroy everything in your life. Every single thing in your life, it will destroy. Okay, I mean, I don't think that most people have ever been up against anything like that, and I don't really want to go into it on the radio, but it's very powerful and all-encompassing, particularly if you're a bureaucrat and you had a clearance and you signed all sorts of paperwork saying that they could do all sorts of nasty things to you if they didn't happen to like you on that particular day, okay? It's not easy for one individual to stand up to that if there's no one behind them. And if there's no one crying out for them, you're just a person standing up for principles and saying, I'm not going to bend, okay? And you can do all these horrible things to me, but at the end of the day, I will still be me. You will be what you are, and we will have crossed in the night, and you may have won, but I want you to know that I didn't bend, okay? That's not easy. And now you got people that you're sending up there. In my state, we're going to send up Ted Cruz, right? Okay? So he's going to win. It's in Ted Cruz to Washington, okay? So I suspect this guy doesn't know what he's going up against. I think this Murdoch guy doesn't know what he's going up against. How are those guys going to stand against that crap, right? If everybody underneath is just like, well, I'm just going to vote for the R, you know? I'm just going to vote for the elephant. Well, Mitt Romney's a nominee, so I'm just going to vote for him. If you got no principles, if you're not standing up for anything, you're not empowering those people. You're stabbing them in the back because someday they're going to stumble across the real power in Washington, and it's going to come to them, and it's going to crush them or try to crush them. And they either have the internal strength of character to stand up to it, or they need people behind them calling on them to do it. This is why Ron Paul can say to this day that I am not endorsing Mitt Romney. You know why? Because Ron Paul's supporters telling him, you better not endorse Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
These guys need supporters. They need people who are zealots. They need people who actually believe in the Constitution and the stuff. They do not need go-along-to-get-along types. Because if you're a go-along-to-get-along type, you're the problem, and you're what's destroying the nation.
That's right.
Tex, that's a brilliant point. We're in the last 2 minutes, so Tex and I are going to close it out for our live listeners. And then, gentlemen, if you want to stay on, we will go into recording time because we're having a great show. But yeah, Tex is absolutely right. You have to show up at these party meetings, and you have to get involved. And I'm not merely talking here about the Republican Party, although I think since it's the biggest, quote, slash conservative party, that it's a pretty important thing for you to do. But that this includes, if you're inclined to go to the Libertarian Party, you'd better go to those meetings and hold them to their principles, because, you know, I don't know, Gary Johnson's kind of a waffler on whether he's a Republican or a Libertarian, so you got to keep an eye on him and the leadership. Same with the Constitution Party. Virgil Good's a good guy, and Jim Clymer was just on Bard's Logic, and he's also an excellent man. But you have to hold all leadership in all parties accountable. That's the whole point. And what you do is when you find somebody that's not adhering to the principles that the party professes to adhere to, you've got to show up like a Terminator.
Get out.
And tell them that they're no longer welcome in the party. And there's nothing wrong with having 6 or 7 or 8 conservative parties. We don't have to have one conservative party, because guess what? You're only going to get one guy from one party in the White House. And if you have 270 guys from 6 parties who are all constitutional conservatives, they're going to caucus together. So it's not a problem. You don't have to build a coalition government, because you're going to have a president from one party, and then you're going to have, you know, Congress and Senate from a bunch of different parties, and they're going to have to figure this out. The idea is that you got to get behind the Constitution, you've got to get involved, and you've got to be there. For right now, this is Tex and Rex signing off.
Flames of Liberty will never die. Until next time. We going into recording time, Rex?
We are currently in recording time. We just said goodnight to our live listeners, and we do have a couple of listeners. I believe we've got Harriet and Mary who are listening. Ladies, if you want to come in, just go ahead and hit me up in chat. And then we've got, probably about an hour of recording time. I don't know if we want to use all of it, but why don't we go ahead and do a little round table. We'll start with Chris. We'll go to Randy, and then Robert, and back to Tex.
Oh, me up?
Yeah.
You know, once again, we did the interview, Robert was talking about it, of Jim Clymer, and we laid out the questions that two VP boys had an opportunity to argue over and dance around the fire and never really come to any conclusions or prove their points. And it was very refreshing hearing somebody who stands on the Constitution in all their decisions. It was great. Kelly came on and actually was on for most of it, mostly listening in the beginning, but he also had a chance to ask his grand jury questions and things, and that was interesting hearing that. So I recommend people listen to that. I really think that, and Jim said this tonight, and it's something that I think all of us have kind of come to the conclusion, and that is we need to educate people, because just like for myself on this journey I've been over this last year of my life and learning everything that I've learned, not always liking everything I learned, but, you know, I know it now, I'm down the rabbit hole. But we need to educate people, because if you educate people and they realize how perverted the government and how off target it is from what our founders put this country together on, it makes them want to find answers. Because here's the problem. People vote thinking the person's going to go to, you know, the government and then fix this crap for them. And obviously Americans, I guess somebody said it was 7%, you know, and of people that are dissatisfied with what's going on in the government. So if you give them knowledge, it makes them hungrier for more knowledge, and that's where the change is going to occur, because it's going to be an education process. I wish I was where I'm at a year ago. I really do, because I could have done more. So, it's just looking forward into the future and saying, okay, got to build these coalitions, got to build this educational platform, draw people in and educate them, and we're going to create something big here.
Well, Chris, I just want to support what you're saying and just say that, look, I wish I was, you know, intellectually where I am right now last year, at the same time last year. We would have been able to do so much more, because the Gingrich movement, you know, in particular, we were just, well, we'll play by the rules. Gingrich is the guy. I mean, what are you going to do? And, you know, the Ron Paul people, they, you know, got screwed last time in 2008, so they were already, tuned into the delegate strategy. You know, we would have been much more impactful had we had our shit together earlier. The problem is the party shut that thing down, and that really is the main line of attack, is we now have to go man the barricades and assault the party and fucking get rid of these rules and tear this damn thing down, because otherwise – we got to go to something else. because there's one last shot for this party, and then the damn thing's done. It's over. And I know Randy's like, you know, fuck it, why are you doing it? I don't know, Randy. because
I'm
I
telling
her.
You, just
I love
all
her,
you got to do, brother,
go
is recognize you've had that one last shot, man. That's all.
That's right.
You've already shot your wad, dude. Take a grip of it. The wad has been shot.
That's right. Now I'm going to run to this poem, Randy. It's just going to come back to me.
Seriously, you know, I know that you guys are having what I would call the great awakening, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, and I understand the learning curve that you guys are going to. I mean, just the fact that you've got a show that's using the word duopoly just blows me away with what you guys know. So I mean, you know, it's fantastic in that particular regard. So, you know, kudos to you guys, and I, you know, whatever I can do to support you to get to the point that, you know, look, we've got to realize who controls the two-party duopoly. And when you understand who controls it, then you really got no choice but to say, you know what, it's kind of like our founding fathers. You know what? At one point in time, they had to realize, guess what? We're not reforming this from within. King George has it locked up. We're going to have to fight this thing from the outside. And I think that's where the realization is going to have to take place at some point in time.
Well, I, Randy, I think you're right. You know, and the thing is, it's easier to fight with the inside. And so, you know, I'll be honest, to just show my cards. I'm hoping Romney loses, because if Romney loses, at least the Republican establishment has to, like, come to grips with, like, holy shit, what did we do? And then you can sit down like, yeah, you fucked up real good, you know. That's why you got to go. But, you know, if he wins, you know,
yeah,
shit, it's a harder thing to do, you know. And
yeah,
that's,
well,
you
know, I
play the outside game.
I don't think it's any more difficult one way or the other, or any more easier one way or the other, quite frankly, because when you understand who has the controls, it doesn't matter if it's Romney or if it's Obama or if it's Bush or some other yay, you know. I mean, look, 2004, I was here when it was the Bush-Kerry, and my God, you know, even David Barton, I don't know if you guys know who he is, from the Wall Builders. You know, I got on a radio show, and I said, and this guy was on this talk radio show, and he's like, you must vote on principle, not out of fear. This is a war between good and evil, and you must vote for Bush. And I about, what? I pulled over. I called into the show. It was 15 minutes into the show, one-hour show. I called in, and, you know, of course, they had the call screener. I said, I want to commend David Barton on, you know, his position of, you know, voting on principle and not out of fear. And the guy says, well, what's your take on that? And I'm like, oh, crap. You know, if I tell him, he's not going to let me on. You know, and so I'm like, you know, okay, here it is. I want to know if David Barton believes that so strongly, why he's supporting a clown like Bush and not supporting somebody as constitutionally minded and supports every virtue and principle he says he espouses, and take a look at Michael Peruca. Well, I sat on the phone for 45 minutes, and the last 5 minutes they had gone to break, they come back, and it was actually, I'll tell you what, it was the Janet Parshall's America show. And it was on, I was hearing it on live on XM satellite. And so they didn't let me on, but they saw the point. And so Janet Parshall says, okay, David, she says, okay, we've been talking about, you know, voting principle over fear. And there's some pretty good candidates out there, third party candidates. Oh, my God. You would have thought I just took a shot at David Barton, and he went high and to the right, and he started yelling, they're going to split the vote! It's going to... And I'm like, holy freaking cow! Dude went totally nuts. After he just said, you got to vote on principle, not out of fear, he just took off on that fear track like it was incredible. So, I mean, it's, you know, 2004, 2008, I heard the same thing. Now I'm hearing it over again, and we're going to hear the same thing in 2016. So at some point in time, we're going to have to say enough is enough, and let's stop riding that train. Let's get off, and let's start jetting this country in the other direction.
Well, you know, Randy, that 2004 election was probably the first time that I really, you know, had to do some soul searching. Of course, I was in D.C. at the time and all this, but, you know, I was like, what is Bush doing, right? So, you know, things are done when Bush becomes president or anybody becomes president, things become done in his name, right? So, you know, I've been in meetings where, like, well, the president wants this, you know, and
right.
So therefore you have to work on it. And we're like, you know, we're kind of looking at each other like, yeah, well, the president also wants this, and this is his top priority. No, this is his top priority. No, we were told this is his top priority. Like, the president wants everybody comes and they pretend to speak in the president's name when you're in the bureaucracy. You're just looking at each other like, you know, and
right.
Then you have people calling you on the phone, hey, we really need this. I mean, this is a presidential initiative. Dude, everything is a presidential initiative. I'm in the bureaucracy. What do you think I'm working on, right? If it's not, if the administration doesn't want it, I'm not doing it, dude. So it's all presidential stuff. So quit giving that to me. But, you know, when I was in the 2004 election, looking at this stuff, I was like, you know, what is going on? We've got, you know, this big government conservatism, right? Which, that is an oxymoron, like military intelligence, you know, all due respect to the military. But, you know, I mean, one of those things where you're just like, this, you know, now we got a prescription drug benefit program that we can't pay for. Now we're going to do the whatever that thing was. We're giving like a bajillion dollars to churches, funding churches, which wouldn't the government use that like lunch money in order to control what was being said in the church? And
look,
isn't that a bad idea?
There is never money that goes out but what there isn't a string attached. Never is there money that goes out but what there isn't a string attached.
Exactly. And whose brainchild was that? That was Karl Rove. So is Karl Rove either naive and he doesn't freaking know that, or is Karl Rove, was that purposeful, right? So now you got to ask yourself, because you don't know. And the amount of money we spent just went up and up and up domestically. And I am a Newt Gingrich Republican, a Ronald Reagan Republican, but, you know, almost even a Newt Gingrich Republican. Before I'm a Ronald Reagan Republican, I know Reagan, you know, he was president, and therefore people love him more, but Gingrich balanced the budget, and he did things that, from Speaker of the House, right, not the president, from Speaker of the House, he did things that I think are incredible and unimaginable. You know, if you can do that kind of stuff, you could move heaven and earth, right? So I'm looking at this party, and I'm like, I'm in this party and I have to defend these things, right? How am I going to defend these things? So I go and I went and I defended them, right? Because that's my job.
Right.
But in that 2004 election, at that point, I was telling people, I said, look, we have 300 million people in this country back then, 300 million people. These are our two best. This is who we have. This is it. Are you telling me these are the best guys? I mean, because George Bush, he didn't seem like, you know, he was the smartest, you know, guy. I'm not saying he's, like, dumb, but I'm not saying he's smart either, okay? I'm not accusing him of being intelligent. And John Kerry, you know, he doesn't strike me as a genius. You know, he doesn't strike, you know, married money. That's what he did. It's like, hey, you know, you've got money and you're of the opposite sex, so, you know, let's make a deal. You know, so, and I'm thinking, how did we come to this thing? And so that was sort of my first level of cognitive dissonance. By 2008, I left Washington and all that kind of stuff, and I watched the election. And I thought it was going to be McCain, but I didn't think McCain was going to be able to overcome Obama because he just had too much appeal, because people wanted so much of a change after Bush, right, because they got lied to. But the critical thing that Obama said, which he doesn't even realize, it's not that he was black or any of that, although that definitely played into it. It was the fact that he was talking about the debt. He was talking about how we ran up all this debt, and that's what Republicans are always concerned about, the level of debt and the amount of taxation that has to go into supporting this Leviathan, right? And he started talking about that, and that's why he won.
He sounded like Reagan when he was campaigning.
He did.
We knew he was lying. We knew he was lying, but he sounded like Reagan when he was campaigning.
And then he got in office and he did a classic Bill Clinton, and he's like, hey, pull the mask off and now let's go spend $1 billion. And Romney's going to be the same way. I guarantee you, just as George Bush spent more money into debt than all prior presidents than him, and Obama came in and did the exact same thing, including George Bush, Mitt Romney or Barack Obama will go into office and they will do the exact same thing because there is a game being played.
But this is the last time it will be played because we're in the end game. This cannot... It's not a matter of, you know, will it, won't it, when will it happen. This cannot last. And I suspect that by 2017, the Federal Reserve note will no longer be our currency. And the only question that remains is, will we have a U.S. Treasury note backed by gold and silver, or will we be subsumed into some kind of global fiat paper regime and lose our sovereignty? And that's up to you.
Up
to you.
Obviously, the push is for the latter. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, we've talked about this, Chris, me and you, several times about the creature from the Black Lagoon. I mean, Jekyll Island, and it's been a plan, and they are executing it, and we have got to start having victories and immediate victories. Which is kind of a segue to something I want to mention to you all. I really, 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 really invite you, strongly would encourage you to join me in St. Louis at the end of next month, November the 30th through December the 1st. It's a Friday, Saturday. The Constitution Party is having their national committee meeting, and it's being held in St. Louis. You can go online and register. The early bird registration is $120, and the early bird registration ends this Thursday. Man, I would love to have you guys come and join us, hear what we're doing, meet Virgil Goode, meet the national chairman, meet me. I'd love to meet you all. And, just to be able, you guys know what it is to be at a convention, and I know most of you have attended those, but this is going to be really, following the elections, and nationally, this will be our first opportunity to meet together and start planning for our future and start laying down the strategy of what we're going to do. So would really strongly encourage you all to take a look at that and possibly join us there in St. Louis next month.
I saw that movie once, Meet Me in St. Louis. With Judy Garland? That sounds great, Randy. Well, I appreciate you telling everybody about that. And if you have any links that you would like to post in chat, the chat window is still open.
Okay. And that anybody can go to constitutionparty.com and go to the events. And where it has the events, it has the registration, all of the information everybody needs to do. And just download the thing and send it in and join us, because you know what? I appreciate the fact of looking at trying to sustain or, take back the Republican Party. But, one of the things is, especially here in Illinois, in 2006, when I was running for governor, there was another guy who was running, and that was for the Constitution Party, by the way. There was another guy by the name of Jim Oberweis, owns Oberweis Dairies here in Illinois. He's a multimillionaire, and he has run for Senate. He's run for state rep. He's run for governor now. He's run for congressman. And I know for a fact that he has invested millions upon millions of dollars. And when we were campaigning there at the first of the year in 2006, he's like, Randy, why don't you just stop what you're doing? Come join me and help me reform the party from within. And, he hammered me that a couple of times, and I had to think about it. And I'm like, wait a minute. Jim, I know that you've been doing this for years now. You're a good conservative man. You've invested a lot of your time, money, and efforts. I know you've invested millions of dollars to do just exactly that, and you haven't won a single race yet. You've invested millions of dollars, and you haven't won one single race as a conservative. What does that tell you, Jim? How well is that reforming the Republican Party working out for you? It's time to start looking at the facts and start hammering this baby from a point that I believe we've actually got a chance for success.
What did he say?
He walked away. He literally did not say anything. My dad was there as a witness. He walked away and didn't say a thing.
Randy, that's the inherent problem, which is, look, what we're talking about, which is conservative principles and conservative ideals, this is where the country is, okay? So the country's not liberal. The country's not Republican. The country's not Democrat, It mostly is center-right, and it is conservative, and it believes in what the conservatives believe in. But conservatives have been convinced, the media, that their opinion doesn't matter, and so they dropped out, right? So you got to reawaken them. The thing is, how do you find that magic formula that can reawaken, you know, Gulliver and break him free from all the bullshit ties that have tied him down? Because it is possible. The thing is, I'm a pragmatist. What is most effective? And, you know, at this point, we're 2 weeks away from a general election. I can't figure that out ahead of the general election. All I can tell anyone is that don't vote for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, because it is inconsequential who you vote for. Don't listen to this false dichotomy. They both are singing from the same hymnal. And the only thing that you can do is go find a candidate that actually expresses what you actually believe and go vote for that, because if you increase the volume of that vote, the two parties, if it's loud enough, they will have to change course and start courting your vote again, right? Meaning that you're not for sale. That's the only thing that's going to save you, because a bunch of shit ton of votes for Obama or Romney, they're going to say, yeah, see, my bullshit's, you know, it's awesome. And they're going to do
my
the same thing.
My bullshit's better
next
than
time.
Your bullshit.
That's right. They're going to do the same thing next time. Listen, I mean, we're mostly Republicans here, okay? So listen to Barack Obama. It's like, well, it's a bunch of tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, right? How many times does he say that? That's a thoughtless comment. There's no intellectualism behind that. There's no data behind that. It's just a phrase. But yet people hear that and like, yeah, tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, right? And you can hear people around you. They repeat this stuff, tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, like they're all fucking high, right? Why are they saying this shit?
Here's
all
the thing.
BS.
Here's the thing. Okay, let's just say there's an epiphany. Everybody wakes their ass up, and all of a sudden, they realize it's time to take back the Republican Party. Okay? Guess what? That might work for about 2 to 4 years. Do you think it's going to have a longevity in that particular plan? Because of, let's not forget, who actually controls the top there is those globalist bankers who have no intention of losing their foothold. So, you know, the fact is that, and you know, they concede every once in a while to keep people, you know, oh, we've got another chance. Oh, hey, wait a minute. You know, they do that. They it's like sitting at a blackjack table where the blackjack dealer will let you win a few hands just long enough so that you finally end up bankrupt. That's what they keep doing to us.
Yeah, Randy, a few things. First, you know, this is before the election, okay? So we're encouraging everyone to go third party for this election at the top of the ticket, and then, you know, to look at who's the actual conservative on all their down ballot ticket stuff. So definitely research that stuff before you get into the voting booth. And don't vote for rhinos, and don't vote for a party. Vote for somebody who actually believes what you believe. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, with respect to the parties and reforming them is in this election, I think we finally were able, by working within the party, and the Ron Paul people did, work within the party structure. If you work within the structure, eventually, if you use their rules and you're winning, they will have to prove that they're cheating. And I think that's what happened in Tampa, is that it finally became clear to everyone who's paying even the slightest bit of attention, that what they had to do in Tampa was cheat. Now, the people who are in charge, the John Sununus and all the others, they will say, oh, we weren't cheating. We were expressing the will of the voter, which they manipulated by having Karl Rove, the guy with the largest political pack for the Republican Party, on television telling people what to do, right? You know, they manipulated it. But, you know, we finally exposed the fact that it's a sham.
But
you know,
honestly, that's exactly what happened in 2008, too. I mean, it was already exposed to be a sham. I mean, how many times do you have to be punched in the face with the same amount of evidence?
Well, not everybody got it back then. And so you keep doing it over and over again, right?
Well, not everybody got it now either. But
yeah,
that's not the
point. Not everybody understands now either, because we're still talking to people. I mean, Rex, you're getting BS on Facebook. Sammy's got people calling in, right? They're bought into the thing. And so you got to go do it again. You got to go re-crash the car. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know,
yeah,
so
look,
there's
it does
a
come
certain
down to
amount
education.
Of people who will always be in that party, because they're sort of like zombies. Like, well, this is the only opposition party. And so you go, you get in the driver's seat, you buckle yourself in, and you go crash the car into the wall. You're like, hey, you see how this thing crashed against the wall? Yeah, it sucks. You see all those people flying forward, they didn't have the seatbelt. Who the hell knew? Who the hell knew? Oh, yeah, well, I knew like 4 years ago. I knew 8 years ago. Okay, yeah, well, this thing's bullshit. This is a bullshit car. I wouldn't buy this car, right? And then you talk to them. But you got to keep recrashing that car because there's not enough of us right now, you know? So I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong. What I'm saying is I'm a pragmatist, and I got to find the most practical methods in order to make this work.
I'm just trying to help you show that see the pragmatic view is to give up that party, brother.
Well, I'll actually agree and disagree with both of you because I don't think that we're faced with an either or choice. I think it's a both and. I mean, what's wrong with having a conservative Republican constitutional party? Yeah, exactly. We've talked about that before. But here's the thing and the way to look at it. We don't know what the Bible strategy is because let's face two things. One, if Romney wins on November 6th, the Republican strategy becomes significantly less viable because with the rules as they are right now, 2016 will not be an opportunity for conservatives in the Republican Party whatsoever because of the rule changes that Sununu put in place. And if Romney wins, those won't be dislodged. If Obama wins, there's a better chance. But the fact is that there's no need to work one or the other for two reasons. One, the strategy everybody should be looking at is the Constitution has to be the supreme law of the land. Conservatism actually wins elections if you give the conservative people of America a clear choice. Most of the conservatives vote Republican, so if they're aware, they might take a look at the Constitution Party and Virgil Goode. But if they're not aware, they're going to be at those Republican meetings. So unless conservatives show up and expose the Republicans for who they are, we're going to lose a lot of conservatives merely because they're going to remain in that party. So it is a both-and strategy. But I think the other thing to keep in mind is we're kind of overly focused on the top job because it has become practically dictatorial. They just switch dictators every 4 years. But there are numerous other places where the Constitution Party is doing very well in many areas and where the Republican Party is actually pretty good in many areas. That's with real conservative candidates at the local and state level. So we have to put pressure from below by going grassroots conservative at the bottom and pressure from above by going conservative at the top. And those won't necessarily be in one or the other party or even another party possibly. It is a matter of finding the conservative choices and supporting them because that will do nothing but help the Republican Party be more conservative. It'll give more prominence to the Constitution Party, and it'll put the Constitution back on the map. And that's what
I really
the strategy has to be.
Just go Samson style into the temple of the Republican Party and have them faced with a choice where they have to admit that they are actually venal sellouts and that they don't actually believe the shit that they claim to believe in, and then I push the damn columns down of the temple right on top of them. That's what I want.
Well, so I
think that temple down your way?
You know what, though?
I think you either believe this shit or you expose yourself as a liar.
Well, I think
that's
that
what
you
I want.
Do that
I like clear choices.
Well, I think that's exactly it. I think the way you push those columns out is you push the ability for them to possibly lose elections right out from underneath their feet. You know, I mean, that they...
Well, that's why the worst outcome of this election for me, and I'm just going to say it even though, you know, a lot of people will say it's heretical and maybe some people will come back and have it haunt me, is if Romney wins, for me that's terrible because I've just lost the Republican Party. And I actually needed the Republican Party as an opposition party against what's happening to our country. And if Romney wins, what I've learned is that the opposition has infiltrated our party and there is no longer any opposition in the United States of America. And that, to me, is the worst thing that could possibly come out of this election. And so I'm terrified of a Romney victory, only slightly less than I am terrified of a Obama victory. I hate both of these candidates, and I hate absolutely everything that they represent. But what would make me the most happy is if Romney lost, because then there's something that is fixable. Because if Romney wins, shit. I mean, what the hell will I do then?
Yeah, well, we don't know how they're going to call it, but clearly there's definitely a lot of shenanigans going on. I mean, I saw Randy posted this earlier also. one of Romney's sons owns one of the voting machine distributors in the Cincinnati area. Soros owns some of them. Bain owns some of them. So, you know, it is entirely possible that the media narrative switches to Romney and that the votes go Romney's way, which, you know, could happen. But I don't know that the banksters have made up their mind which fool they want, because that's just kind of a tertiary choice. The fact is that they win either way. And as always, the winner of tonight's debate was, without a question, Goldman Sachs.
Well, I think that's what happened here in Illinois back in 2006 when I ran for governor. You know, that the Republicans gave a lady by the name of Judy Bartapinka the nomination for governor. And, I mean, she was probably more liberal than the actual Democrat was. I mean, she was pro-homosexual, pro-choice, pro-gun control. I mean, it was hard for, you know, not to. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is, and here in Illinois, you have open primaries. So, you know, all you got to do is pull one or the other ticket. And so, you know, when they know that Blagojevich had the lock for the Democrats, well, that freed up a lot of the Democrats to go and hijack the Republican primary and nominate Judy Bartapinka. And so you had a situation where it was so bad here in Illinois that the Green Party got 16% of the vote because they were probably more conservative than the other two. And so they actually got established party status for 4 years here in Illinois because of that very fact of how horrible those two candidates were. In fact, it's why I got nearly 20,000 officially recorded votes here in Illinois as a write-in with a name like Stumblebee. I had to teach people how to spell Stumblebee for crying out loud.
That's a good Irish name.
So, you know, it just goes to show that I think people seriously are looking for something else. And they, you know, I mean, I think even the whole Ross Perot fiasco, I think that in of itself shows and demonstrates that people are so hungry for another choice, you know, that Ross Perot could have won that. It was just a crying shame that it went down the way it did. But, you know, I think it perfectly demonstrated that America is looking for a real choice. And if we can give it to them, by God, they're going to take it.
Yep. Absolutely agreed, because the fact is that the Constitution is a wonderful document, but it is just a document. It's the Constitution written on the hearts of the American people that prevails. But the subtle manipulations of propaganda have made most people think that, A, they're alone, B, there aren't many of us, and C, there's nothing they can do. And our job is to tell them, you are not alone, you are the majority, and there's plenty you can do. So get off your couch and do it, because if you don't do it now, you are going to wake up one day in a country that you do not recognize. And if you speak up then, you will disappear. So now's the time to do it. Don't
Absolutely.
Wait. Don't delay. You got to get off your ass. Okay, we've gone well into recording time, and we do have another late show tomorrow at 11 p.m. following the real presidential debate. Free and equal. And Randy, are you familiar, obviously, being involved with where it will be broadcast?
It's gonna be,
I know you're going to be there.
It's going to be downtown Chicago at the Hilton Chicago on South Michigan, 720 South Michigan, I believe it is. And I'm definitely going to be there. And, you know, I'll be certainly making myself available. And but it's going to be exciting, and I'm going to have a great time. You know, I know Virgil Goode personally, and it's going to be a great time to be down there with him. And I know I've worked with Christina Tobin for a long time, and you know, she does quality stuff. And you know, of course, I don't know if you all saw the ones that Free and Equal sponsored back in 2008.
Yes.
You know, but they just fantastic what's going to happen. And if anybody wants to go, I got free tickets. Call me. Send me an email. I've got them for you.
Sounds good. Randy, it'll also be broadcast on C-SPAN. And that's and I think also Russian television is going to be carrying in a few other internet outlets. So that's very exciting, and we hope that you'll be able to call in and fill us in afterwards. And one other thing I would like to request of you, if you get a chance through proximity, if you would please snap Larry King's suspenders and tell him Tex and Rex say hi.
You know, that reminded me of one time I was actually in Los Angeles. I was stationed out in California for a number of 10 years. And so we went up there and got to the game shows. And one time I was at the Easter Seals Telethon, and they had what's his name? Tom Bosley from Happy Days. He was there to present a significant amount of money. Well, of course, you know, he did the Glad trash bag, hefty trash bag thing. And they had those trash bags set at the end of this row. I had gotten up and gone away for just a couple seconds. Then they had these bags. Well, I went to move them, and there was probably, you know, $100,000 in three trash bags, and the security guard, you know, came unglued. And of course, I had to talk. I got a chance to talk with Tom Bosley and stuff, but it was just snapping old Larry King's suspenders just reminded me of the. It was amazing. It was a dead, limp-wristed handshake that I had with Tom Bosley.
Well, that's unfortunate. But just make sure you let him know that Tex and Rex said hi. And, Randy, am I correct that there will be another debate next week?
I'm not sure that is a dead ringer yet. I haven't heard for sure, but I will certainly find out from Christina when I'm there tomorrow to see what's going on and if there's anything I can do to help.
Sounds good. And if you have any details on that tomorrow, please, when you call in, fill us in. We look forward to hearing from it, and we will be anxiously watching and waiting for the debate, and then we'll be doing analysis tomorrow night. So please, for those of you listening to the archives, join Tex and Rex, same bat time, same bat channel, for post the real presidential debate analysis tomorrow, 11 p.m. Eastern time, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk to Randy Stuffelbeam from the Constitution Party, the vice chair of the Constitution Party. Closing thoughts, Randy, before we wrap it up?
No, man. I just, you know, just hang in there, gentlemen. And I use that term loosely. You know, we are in the fight of our lives, I believe. And I have no intention of losing this fight. We've got our country to save. We've got our, you know, posterity, not our posteriors, to worry about in this. And I just really thank you all for what you're doing, and you've got my support here, gentlemen.
Appreciate it, Randy. Thank you very much, Tex. You want to close it out with some final thoughts?
Yeah, sure. I think I'll keep it short just to say that, you know, I'm disgusted by the debate that we had tonight. You know, I'm disgusted by these, quote, candidates and this faux nominees that we have. We as a nation, we had an opportunity to have better choices than this, and they were denied to us. And, you know, when these types of things happen in the political process, I feel no obligation to go along with the scam, and therefore I'm withdrawing my support for the scam. There are good people in the Republican Party that I will support. I will never support any Democrats because, as I've said multiple times, the Democrat Party is a criminal organization masquerading as a political party. But if you cannot defeat the Democrat Party, the criminal organization masquerading as a political party, by becoming a criminal organization yourself, and therefore those within our party who seek to adopt those tactics, they will never have my support. And if this is what this party has become, it will no longer be my party. And so I think that's it.
Couldn't agree with you more, and we look forward to seeing you folks again tomorrow night, and then we'll be back at it Thursday evening at our regular time, 10 p.m. Eastern. The show is, as always, irreverent. We try to be relevant, and we are always radioactive. Tex and Rex are just a couple of brown coats with a microphone trying to save the country. Thank you for listening. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Flames of Liberty will never die. Till next time.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out. Black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.